is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He gonna come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo!
McCoy, touch to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Well, we finally made it through the week. It is a Friday afternoon now. Welcome in to the show, the John Murphy Show. Sal Capaccio here, my last day here this week until the next time. Murph back on Monday after his nice long vacation where he's had a chance to recharge his batteries and ready to talk Bills football with you next week. It's going to be just about a week and a half away from training camp. So we're wrapping up this week in style today here on the John Murphy Show with Donald Jones, as always. Donald, good Friday to you.
Yeah, good Friday. Sal, I need to talk to you about something.
Oh, no. What did I do?
I had somewhat of a nightmare last night.
Oh, no. Was I involved in this?
Yeah, you were, actually. You and I were golfing in Florida.
Oof.
And we had this conversation about alligators.
Alligators.
And so I'm golfing.
Oh, no.
And my ball is right near some water. And I look down and I see a gator in the water. And then I look up and there are like 10 of them surrounding me.
No way.
And I woke up instantly. This is really in my dream last night. I'm like, what?
That's
like, I got to tell Sal this.
Yes, I know. This is exactly why we did it.
It's his fault. I'm having nightmares.
Do you have a normal fear of alligators?
No.
Okay.
No.
So,
I've never,
wow, that would have been horrible.
You know, I've never really had to think about them because I live in New Jersey. So,
oh, my God.
But it was a bad dream.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, what time was this? Did you wake up?
It was still nighttime. I don't even know.
Like early in the night?
Yeah.
Okay. Because sometimes dreams last forever, right? And then you at least think they do. But in your head, they probably go for like 7-8 seconds.
Right.
You think they're 7 hours.
Right.
You wake up. You're like, oh, my God. And then you're like, I got to get up. And you look at the clock. It's 12:30.
Right.
Like, I just went to bed.
I didn't even
11.
Look at the clock. I just laid back down. But I remember thinking to myself, like, I got to tell Sal this in the morning.
I am on the way here today, and I'm listening to The Instigators, which precedes this program.
Mm-hmm.
I'm listening to Rob Ray as the co-host with Andrew Peters, the normal co-host, and they're talking about when Rob was in Ottawa as a senator,
mm-hmm.
and they fought.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hilarious and fantastic that they were recounting how they fought against each other, right? I mean,
yeah.
it was. I don't know if you heard this whole thing, but I came in here, and I was telling you in the office about it. Do you think it's kind of weird that hockey has fighting that's, like, legal, and you just go out there and fight each other? Because if you throw a punch on the football field, you're done. Like, you're just gone out of the game. Do you think it's weird as an athlete that there's a sport that – I mean, basketball does not allow that. Baseball does not allow that.
Right. Baseball.
I know that fighting has gone down in hockey, and they've tried to curb it.
Yeah.
As an athlete, do you think that's kind of weird?
I do think it's weird. I do think it's weird because, you know, it's like it's part of the culture and it's allowed,
mm-hmm.
you know. And when two guys fight on the ice, it's like the fans get all excited
right.
and all that stuff, you know. But if it happens in another sport, you know, those guys are labeled as whatever they're labeled as. And you know, they're suspended or fined or whatever it is. But there are guys in hockey, like their job is to do
fight.
That. Yeah. You know,
those two guys, their job was to fight.
Right. You know, so it's definitely a weird thing. And then it's definitely weird when you actually fight a guy and then you come back to talk about it. You know?
And they sit on the same set together and they have to talk about it, right?
Yeah. That's
the mutual respect they were talking about. And I'll tell you what, I got to give credit. I listened to the whole thing. I watched the video we tweeted out on the Instigators account. I was expecting that Rob was actually going to win the fight. I'm telling Andrew had him. He had him the whole way. Rob got a good shot in the end. And that's exactly why I think that a lot of people maybe voted for Rob. But here comes the fight. We're going to show it right now on the TV side of things. If you didn't know about it, they were talking about it on the Instigators. But the best part, now here, and Rob had him early. Andrew came back. He landed a few blows with the right. Okay? And I think Andrew, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. After about halfway through, I'm like, Petey's got him. Like, I think he's doing a good job. Look at this, right? He's throwing some nice haymakers. And then Rob came through, and he clocked him pretty good with the right hand. And then Petey at the end came back, and he got his own shot. There was a good fight. That's a good hockey fight right there.
So are there rules like there only could be two guys fighting at one time?
Well, yeah, if you get into the fight as the third man, it's called the third man in. See, there's the fight. There's the one that knocked him off his balance a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's why people probably voted more for Rob. But I thought Andrew handled himself pretty good against one of the best all time.
Hmm. All right.
He called him his mentor today.
Really?
I mean, PD, that's what Rob was. Because Rob's older, and Andrew came by after Rob. He kind of took his place as the guy on the team that had to fight everybody.
Yeah.
You know?
See, I come from a culture of that stuff, you know? So I don't really, you know, in terms of, like, fighting and praising the fights in hockey and stuff like that.
You just want to get away from that.
I want to get away from it because I truly come from a culture of fighting and seeing people. Me growing up, I've seen people actually get beat almost within to death, you know? So I don't like
it. You don't even like it.
I don't like it.
Well, so if you were in charge of the NHL, you'd want to get rid of that stuff.
I would.
If you jump into a fight, yeah, you're the third man and you get a penalty, and then you're looked at really – people don't look at you very favorably either. You know what I mean? Like, let those two guys go. Let them square off.
Right.
Do their thing. Then they go in and, you know, it's always been like a show for a lot of those guys. Not as much anymore, but Razor was always known to take his shirt off during a fight.
What?
Oh, you didn't know this?
No.
Oh, you have to Google and YouTube some Rob Ray fights.
Was he at least, like, in shape?
His whole thing was his shirt would come off and his equipment would come off. He'd be bare-chested at the end, and he would raise his hands to the crowd and give the number one sign.
That's how you do it.
He was like a wrestler out there.
Yeah, that's how you do
on
it.
On skates, right?
WWE.
It was
WWE.
Pretty cool, though. If you missed that discussion, I thought it was really cool. Here's one for you. You can see what I'm talking about. After this robbery, and this is against Ty Domi, we're showing it. And I know we're going to talk football here, but it's Friday. We're going to have some fun, and we're watching. Here comes his shirt, and this is normal for him, though. His shirt comes off. He doesn't mind. He puts Ty Domi against the glass. I'm doing a little play-by-play here of something we're watching on TV. I know the radio folks can't see it, but go Google and YouTube some of this stuff. And Rob, basically, every time he got into a fight, he actually had his equipment loose so that it would come off, I think, and he wanted the guy to kind of rip it off so the guy couldn't grab it and hold him tight. I think that was part of his strategy, which is a good strategy when you think about it, right?
I still don't understand how they fight on ice, though. Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah, I don't get that. You know, you need some traction with your feet to be able to fight. You know, so I don't understand how they do that tonight.
Watch
on the
ice. He was incredible,
you know,
right?
Yeah.
Rob was – look at this. Look at this. I mean, that's insane, this stuff. All right. The great stuff there from those guys in the Instigators. Hope you tune into that 10 to 12 this morning and every Monday through Friday. We do have football for you today, obviously, here on the John Murphy Show. What a great lineup we have today. Now, I'm jealous of you and Murph all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You get to talk to my girl Kim Jones all the time.
Right.
And I finally get to talk to Kim Jones today on the radio. Now, Kim and I know each other. We see each other all the time at games. We say hi. We talk in the sidelines. We exchange information.
Right.
I've never had her talk with her on the radio, though. Like, you get to do that all the time. So today, one of the things I said this week was I want Kim Jones on the radio this week because I'm jealous because you guys always get to talk to NFL Network's Kim Jones and I don't.
I don't know how often we're going to be able to talk to her anymore, you know, because she would come here quite often, or we would talk to her quite often because obviously she covered Rex.
That's right.
You know, and Rex was here, and Rex is not here anymore. So, you know, unless the Bills are winning, which we hope so, and then maybe if they're winning, then she will be back up the Buffalo.
It is her beat, but you're right. The storyline of Rex made it
right.
They wanted someone here on a daily basis almost to kind of cover nationally for an NFL Network, Rex Ryan. But we'll ask her about that. Are we going to see her in Buffalo this year because of Rex being gone? What she thinks about Sean McDermott? What she thinks about not only the Bills but the Jets? Because obviously she covers the Jets and the Giants in New York. We'll get with Kim Jones of NFL Network at 1 p.m. At 2 p.m., Bills fans, you won't want to miss it. We got a great guest today. Also, another first-time radio interview for me, Frank Reich, architect of the greatest comeback in NFL history, former Buffalo Bills quarterback, and current Philadelphia Eagles offensive coordinator. That's going to be a pretty cool interview, and I'm really looking forward to talking to Frank Reich.
Yeah, I want to talk to him a little bit about their quarterback. You know, and see, I mean, this is his second year. They expect him, I'm sure, to take a jump from last year. He came on strong early on, and then he kind of died off as the season went on. So I'm sure they're expecting him to take a jump. They got some weapons around him in the passing game and in the running game with LeGarrette Blount. So we'll see what he thinks about that.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And by the way, the reason why we really wanted to get Frank on now, next week on Monday night, I believe it is. Somebody can correct me, but I believe it's on Monday night. We're going to have the – what is it Monday night, Jay? Monday night at 9 p.m. Jay Harris is telling me in my ear. Thank you very much. Monday night at 9 p.m. on MSG. It is the top 10 series continues for the Bills, and this one is going to be the top 10 greatest performances in a game.
Right.
That's a cool top 10, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we bringing Frank Reich on? Well, we believe that he could very well be in that particular top 10 because of the greatest comeback
because
in NFL history and the performance he had in that game.
Hmm. Now, aside from that one, when you think top 10 performances, what is one that would come to your head right off the bat?
That's a great question. Top 10 performance Bills history.
Yeah, in your mind.
Eric Mould still holds I don't know if you know this. I was at the game in Miami, playoff game in Miami, 1998. Mm-hmm. Eric Mould, still to this day, we are almost 20 years later, Donald. He still holds the playoff record for receiving yards in a game. Almost about 240.
I think I remember. We had him on a couple weeks ago.
It's like 240 or something.
Because he had
that,
some bombs, right?
He did. He started the game off, very first play. Doug Flutie throws him a pass, catches a bomb. He's running. He does. I think it's Patrick Surtain, maybe Sam Madison, one behind him. Mm-hmm. And they stripped him, and he lost the ball. And Miami recovered the fumble on the first play on a bomb that he caught and he was running because he didn't have major separation on that play. But that game, he blew up. It was crazy to me. But here's the thing. They lost the game. Mm-hmm. So as a Bills fan, you don't think about necessarily that performance. I do.
You do.
One of the other ones is another loss. Jim Kelly in the 1989 playoff game against the Cleveland Browns. I believe him and Bernie Kosar both threw for over 400 yards.
Wow.
The Bills lost the game at the end of the playoffs. Amazing, right?
Why are the games that the moments that you think of lost losing?
I don't know. I don't know. Great performances in wins. Lee Evans, 83 yards twice in one game against the Houston Texans. Mm-hmm. J.P. Lossman at the end of that game. I don't know.
But
wasn't
these
the same
are not
game,
playoff
actually.
Games.
That was not a playoff game. That's right.
Playoff.
Now, I don't know. I don't think the top 10 isn't just playoff games, right, Jay? The top 10 list is any performance throughout history, right? And look, O.J. had multiple 200-yard rushing games.
Right.
Thurman has had multiple 200-yard rushing games. Mm-hmm. They got to be on that list somewhere.
They would have to.
I mean, those are incredible performances.
I mean, O.J. was doing 200 yards like on a
routinely, it seemed like.
Every week. Especially the year he went over, 2,000 yards rushing?
Yeah, the first one to do it.
Right. You know, he was going over 200 yards routinely. So they should be on the list. I mean, we'll see. I mean, I'm sure there are lots of performances, and I'm sure it was hard for this committee to come down with 10.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be tough, but I'm guessing the Frank Reich comeback is going to be on there. We're going to talk with Frank Reich, like we said, at 2 p.m. 803-0550, the number to call, 888-550-2550. All right, so we have something cool we're going to play for you here. Peyton Manning hosted the ESPYs the other night. We talked about it here on the program, right?
Right.
He also was doing the rounds as he was promoting the ESPYs. He went on Jimmy Kimmel Live. Do you watch Kimmel?
Sometimes.
You a Kimmel or a Fallon guy?
I'm more of a Fallon guy, but I'll watch Jimmy Kimmel.
You know what? I tend to watch Fallon more.
Yeah.
Okay, but I like Jimmy Kimmel. He is very good, actually. So Peyton Manning goes on Jimmy Kimmel Live. And Manning's talking about just different situations in his career and funny things that happen. And he just happens to bring up a situation he had in Buffalo at a Bills game. Which is really outstanding, the way he tells the story, and it's going to provide us some content for our topic today. I want you to hear, right here, what Peyton Manning said to Jimmy Kimmel on Jimmy Kimmel Live.
We were playing Buffalo, middle of my career, and we beat him on the last drive of the game, right? So I'm going into the locker room, and I've always thrown my hat and my sweatbands up into the crowd. You find a kid, right? Even
right.
A kid who's a Buffalo fan. Probably going to want a, you know, a sweatband or a hat or something. So I threw it to one kid. He's like, oh, my gosh, thanks. I threw my hat to a dad. He was happy. I take my other sweatband. I throw it to this kid. He's in a big Buffalo Bills jersey. He throws it right back in my face. You know? And I'm like, you know what? I like that kid. I mean, you know, he likes his team, right? It's not gonna...
You have to respect it.
I like the diehards.
I love it. And he said at the end, I like the diehards.
Like the diehards.
That's
right.
A great story, right?
Yeah.
Here's Peyton Manning, one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history. Did he say what year?
He said the middle of his career.
Middle of his career. But he was already on his way, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's Peyton Manning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if it's Peyton Manning or Jim Sorgi as his backup. If a kid gets a headband.
Right. They usually keep it.
Right.
Yeah.
He throws it to him. The kid whips it back in his face. Manning loves it. Like, that kid's hardcore. He loves his team. I agree. I like that stuff, too. Stick with your team. So here's what we're going to ask you today. What's the most hardcore you are as a Bills fan and how hardcore you've been? And don't give me, like, I don't want, like, an emotional one-moment thing because then we can go off the rails there.
Right.
Okay? Well, there's plenty of that stuff. Like, oh, my God, after they lost this game or won this game, I did something really stupid. I don't want that kind of stuff. What I want is, do you have rituals? Do you have hardcore things you do throughout the week, the way you dress, the way you talk, what you do before games, stuff that you do? Please keep it clean here on the John Murphy Show, but you get where I'm coming from. How hardcore have you been, are you, as a Bills fan? I will tell you, Donald, growing up in Buffalo, I was a hardcore Bills fan as a young kid.
Mm-hmm.
And through high school, I wore Zubaz because they were really big back then. I wore Zubaz all the time. I'd wear Zubaz sweatpants and shirts and hats and all that kind of stuff, right? So I get to college. Mm-hmm. My college roommate, after my freshman year, my college roommate, John, he's from actually Western New York, but he happened to be a Miami Dolphins fan. Still is. We're still very good friends, unfortunately, because he's a Miami Dolphins fan. But we are still very good friends. Mm-hmm. So he happens to be a Miami Dolphins fan. And we had a bet in college throughout the time we were there, the 3 years we were in college together as roommates, essentially. Every time the Bills and Dolphins played, if the Bills won, he had to wear my Zubaz pants, sweatpants, to class all day that Monday.
Washed?
I make sure they were clean. Cool. Okay, I'm not gonna,
that's right, like yeah, that yeah, takes yeah. it to another level. Okay.
If the Dolphins won, I had to wear the ugliest Dolphins mesh hat. Remember those mesh hats? The mesh in the back?
Yeah.
Now they're actually kind of in style. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually have a Yankees one that's pretty cool, but back then, they were not cool anymore. They were the 70s things, and it was this bright orange or teal thing. I don't even remember that at all on there. It had the mesh. I mean, I did stuff like that, right? But that was it. I had to do things like that. But I used to go to games dressed up in my Zubaz, all that kind of stuff. I remember, this is a moment, but I'll tell you, after 51-3, I was in the stadium when the Bills made their first Super Bowl. I was there as a senior in high school, and it was incredible. And if you don't remember that day, a lot of people will, it was kind of snowy and muddy. It was like right around like one of those freezing rain, muddy, snowy type days. And after the game, there's these hills outside the stadium. When you're walking around, you're walking outside, and you're getting out of your seat, and you're going back down to your car. And there was this one little hill right there. It was like a little muddy, and there was grass. And I was so going crazy. I did like a belly flop and slid down the hill, and I got up, and I had my Letterman's jacket on from high school. I got up. Who's standing there? My high school coach looks right at me. Way to treat your Letterman's jacket, dude.
You just destroyed it.
I know, right? It was all right. It was all right.
Jacket. Like, coach, they just went to the Super Bowl.
I know.
Were you in there?
He was pretty excited, too. But, yeah, it was really funny that happened. So what about you? Like, for teams, like any team. I know you didn't grow up a Bills fan, but for you, any team, whether it's the Yankees, your favorite basketball team, football team growing up, did you have anything that you always made sure you did, the way you dressed? How hardcore were you throughout the week or on a game day or anything like that?
I was never a hard – I mean, I was – I was a true Giants fan growing up, but I was never like a diehard, hardcore fan. I think because I played sports.
Yes.
I just never – I never got into it to that level, to that extent.
Did you have family members who did?
I have friends who do. Okay. I have friends who – like one of my boys is a Ravens fan, and the last time they won the Super Bowl, he wore purple for like he went and bought all his purple stuff. He had a purple scarf, everything. He wore purple for like a month. And it was like, dude, like, I'm tired of seeing you in all of this purple stuff. It's ridiculous. Like, we're a different color. But he did it. He said he was going to do it, and he did it, But he's really the one that I can think of. I love track and field.
Oh, yeah.
I love to watch track and field. And I'm a big Usain Bolt fan. I love to watch him run. Even though he's from Jamaica, I still love to just watch him run.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was in college, we had a meeting. We were in training camp, and this was during the Olympics. It was in August, obviously.
Yep.
We were in training camp, and we had a meeting. And I remember I was like, man, I want to see Usain Bolt run. And I was a captain of my team at Youngstown State, and I was like, I want to see this race, because he was racing against, like, Justin Gatlin and all those guys. And it was, it was so much hype. It was going to be a great race. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, I'm going to watch this race. We had a big TV in our locker room. I'm like, I'm going to watch this race. So I'm the captain. So I was like, look, I want to watch this race. So nobody in here move. We're all going to watch this race as a team. And we all going to be late for the meeting as a team. So when the coach comes in here and yells, he's not just yelling at me or one of you guys.
Right.
He's going to yell at the entire team. And we'll all get in trouble for it. Those guys wanted to see the race anyway.
Right.
So that's what we did. But they were like, all right, we'll do it as a team. But they all took my lead, and I was like, I'm going to watch this race. Like, forget that meeting.
You need to finish this story. What happened with the coaches?
Oh, he went off on us.
Were you late for the meeting?
Yeah, we were late. He came in, and he went off, and he used some words that I can't use on air.
Right.
And then we were late for the meeting.
As a team.
We were like, look, coach, we wanted to see the race. We did it as a team. He was proud that we did it as a team.
That's what I was thinking.
But
like,
I bet
in a way he's like, I'm going to punish these guys. But secretly, that was super cool that you guys did that together.
Right, exactly. So it was a good thing.
All right,
but
that's
bad
good.
At the same time.
All right, so how hardcore do you get as a Bills fan? Also, if you want to chime in on what your top performance was for a Bills player in a game, let us know. I just gave you a couple of them for me. Eric Moulds against Miami in the 98 playoffs. Obviously, Frank Reich in the comeback game. We've had a couple of Jim Kelly in the Cleveland playoff game, the loss, unfortunately. But there have been many throughout the years, because I know we already have one call on that, and that is David in Rochester who wants to chime in. Hi, David. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, guys. The one that stands out for me was prior to the four Super Bowl appearances. It was a Monday night game against the Los Angeles Raiders, and the Raiders were a real good team at that time. And it just seemed like Andre Reed took control over that game. I just remember Jim throwing a few interceptions, but anytime he targeted Reed, Reed grabbed it. And there was one play in particular where Andre was streaking down the right side of the field, and Kelly laid it out, and he just reached up and grabbed it and ran all the way for the touchdown. And ended up beating LA on Monday Night Football. But that one stood out to me as, like, you know, the Bills had arrived.
Was that the game? Let me ask you this. Was that the game the Bills had a big comeback and Nate Odoms stripped Willie Gault on the sidelines and ran it back, and Steve Tasker blocked the punt later to take the lead?
Yeah, but that game was all Andre, man.
Okay. I'm just wondering. I think it was a Sunday night, but I'm not positive. But you're right. It was a night game. I remember that because that was one of those games that year, David. Remember they had a bunch of comebacks that year? And before they had the real comeback that everyone talks about now, that game, that was a huge comeback. And you're right. I think Andre had a big day going into there. But I'm going to look that up. But you're right for that memory. Thank you very much for calling.
Particular game, it was like the Bills had arrived. You know?
Yeah, I totally get it. I was there with friends of mine. I think it was a Sunday night, not a Monday night, just to correct. I think that's what was it. I can look it up. But we were there. They had a string of comebacks that year. One was against Denver, one was against the Raiders. And on one particular play, I think it was Willie Gault who had the ball on the sidelines. Nate Odoms literally went up to him, took the ball out of his hands, and went the other way six. And then like the next offensive series, I think it was Steve Tasker blocks a punt, they score, mm-hmm. they take the lead. Pretty cool stuff. Those are the things you remember when you're growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're looking for defining moments like that now as a Bills team, right? Like, you always think, could this be the game? Maybe if something happens, you're like in 2011 when they beat the Patriots, when you guys did.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fan base thought, that's it. This is that moment. We're going to get over the hump. It didn't work out that way.
Right.
But you're always looking for a game like that.
I mean, you're always looking for a game. It's those games are so fun, you know, and they're fun as a player as well. Now, I can't lie to you. Your blood pressure is probably way through the roof. Your stress level is up there. When you're on the field in a game like that, it's kind of like the Patriots game when we beat them here. I mean, those games are so exciting because it can go either way, you know.
Yep.
And then when something like that happens and you strip the ball and take it the other way and then you block a punt and score, I mean, people always will remember those types of moments. And to be a part of that moment as a player, it's a great thing.
How hardcore do you get as a Bills fan throughout the week, game day, things that you do? There's people out there, I guarantee you, who are thinking to themselves, yeah, my family won't even talk to me on game
now,
day. I get
right,
hardcore, right?
Exactly. Now, here's a question I have for you, because obviously you grew up a Bills fan.
Yep.
You grew up here in Western New York. And now you cover the team. You travel with the team. So you're at every game on the sidelines. Is there a ritual that you probably had when you were younger before games that you still do as a reporter?
No, not at all. There was never a ritual I even had before games. But, you know, it's a good question you pose in this sense. I often get accused of being a homer or a guy who, oh, I'm just a fan or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I'll tell you, I do not hide who I am and where I came from. Right. I'm a Buffalonian. I grew up rooting for this team. I want this team to win.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, I'm a part of this city. And I don't care what any person in this media circle in this town thinks. You can be a media critic. You could say to me all you want. Fine, I'm used to it. Call me the name. I don't care. I think I'm professional enough to separate myself and do my job. And I've always said that. Like,
right.
Yeah, I want this team to win. Like, I'm a part of Buffalo, and I want the Buffalo Bills to be the Super Bowl champions on the grandest stage. And I don't hide that from anybody. But at the same time, I have an objective job to do every day to be able to critique and criticize. And the one thing I'll always say, it's a great question because I'm glad you brought it up. I like to tell this to people because I get that. I get it all the time, whether it's on Twitter, from some people, fellow media colleagues. Oh, that Capaccio, he's just a homer on the flagship station. He's just a fan. No, that's not true. I want the team to win. That's true. But you know what? I'm professional enough, I think, and I'm intelligent enough to separate that part of me from doing my job every day on a daily basis, which is interviewing players,
right.
critiquing play, breaking down, and saying, you know what? Donald Jones wasn't very good today.
Right.
And I can say that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I've done that before. I can tell you for sure. I'll give you a great example. Last year against the Pittsburgh Steelers, I thought Zach Brown was bad in that game. I mean, I thought he was, and I said it on the radio. I mean, I thought he was kind of in self-preservation mode, if you will. Like, he wasn't going after people. Mm-hmm. He was kind of shying away. He wasn't the same player I'd seen in the previous games.
Right.
And I went on the radio and I blasted him and said, I think that's the case. And when I say blasted him, I didn't take cheap shots. You know, I didn't say he's a loser or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I said, I just didn't think he played well.
Right.
I have to go and talk to Zach Brown the next day in the locker room. That's my job. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure he knew what I said because he, I think, said something to somebody else about it, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. He still treated me professionally. I treated him professionally, and you move on. He knows I have a job to do, and he might not have liked what I said,
right.
but he knows I have a job to do. So I think, Donald, that's where that part comes in. To your point, no, I'm not going to games painting my face or wearing Zubaz. You know what I mean? I'm not doing that.
Right.
But at the same time, when I get down there, man, at the end of the day, I want the scoreboard to read Bills win.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Now, what about getting ready for a game? Is there something that you...
No, I'm trying to think. You know, now with the routine, I try to, on the road, I try to have a certain time period, like when I'm going to iron, go down to breakfast. I have to iron my clothes or my suitcase, things like that. I try to budget my time, and I got to kind of do a routine that way or else I'm screwed up in my head. Gotcha. It's more for me, not about the team winning. It's about me doing my job. If I don't do everything in a certain sequence or do it organizationally in my own head, I'm like, I'm screwed up. Like, what's going to happen today? I'm not going to do a good job today.
Yeah.
You know what that's like,
I
right?
know exactly what it's like.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you have fans that are season ticket holders or just come to a lot of games, and they do a lot of tailgating. And I want to hear from these guys, but I want to keep it clean.
Right, yeah,
show.
Yeah, yeah.
But they have a certain ritual or just a certain process in getting ready for a game on Saturday night if they have to go to whatever store and get whatever food or beer or whatever it is. And then on Sunday morning, I got to be on the highway by this time so that I can get to the stadium at this time so that we can set up the grill and do all of this stuff. You know, and I mean, you see some crazy things in the parking lot, you know. You know, so it's like, I'm sure people have rituals, and it'd be good to hear from people.
I want to talk to you about that because people might not know this. Some of the best tailgating, this guy and his family, when he was playing. We'll tell you about that. They had a ritual in the parking lot. I joined them one time. Your dad will talk all about that when we come back here on the John Murphy Show. Sal Capaccio, Donald Jones, it's JMS on WGR and MSG.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
All right, thank you very much for joining us. Sal Capaccio with Donald Jones. You can tweet us at Sal Sports, at DA Jones 19, at John Murphy Show. One of my favorite things on Twitter is when someone calls me out for being wrong and they're the actual ones wrong. Jim says, check your facts. You said it was rainy at the Bills-Raiders championship game. That's correct. I just did check my facts, and I'm right. First, I just went to the game book. First half, some rain. Second half, dry. But Jim, it's Friday. It's all good. Thanks for listening. And you know what?
It's
I've been to
Friday.
So many games. We all have. These
no
things
job.
Run together sometimes. I mean, you forget. But what I actually said was it was like a rainy, snowy type mud. And I don't remember the exact, you know, situation throughout every minute of the game. But there you go, Jim. So I did check, and I sent you the link to the game book or the picture of it. So
yeah, you sent them the link and everything. Huh?
I did. I just have to prove myself right.
That's how you do
but
it.
But thank you for listening anyway, Jim. All right. Let's go out to Donovan in Jamestown. Hi, Donovan. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hi, guys. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you.
So I wanted to talk about I wanted to talk about the Bills-Seahawks game from last season.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. How we kind of almost came back, but we really didn't. I just wanted to say that was one of my favorite Bills moments since I've been alive because Tyrod Taylor tried to bring us back, like our whole offense, even though we had the Eric Wood injury and that bad thing happening with Dan Carpenter. And
so what was the performance that you were so excited about? Just Tyrod Taylor's?
Well, yeah, because he brought us back inside the 10 and tried to get us into the end zone, but even though he couldn't, I feel he still tried his best and tried to make it happen for us.
Okay, Donovan, thank you very much. Appreciate the phone call. Let's go out to Paul in Kenmore. Hi, Paul. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Yeah, so, hi, Donald.
How you doing?
Years ago, Freddie Smirlis was on the team that stopped the Jets from winning the game. He blocked the punt.
Field goal.
I mean, the field goal. Mm-hmm. And it was raining like anything at that time. And I thought
this was November of 1988, Donald, because my mind is a steel trap. The Bills clinched the division. It was overtime. Fred Smirlis blocked the field goal to get it to overtime. The Bills win it in overtime, right, Paul? And then this goalpost came down.
Yeah.
That's right. Do you remember the Jets kicker? Do you remember the Jets kicker?
No, I don't.
Pat Leahy. We're showing it right here. There you go. There's the block of the field goal.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Paul. That was when the goalpost came down. It was amazing what happened after this game.
Right.
So Smirlis blocks the field goal. Is there any way, Jay, that we can roll on that to show the goalpost coming down, too? And maybe you guys can cue that up while we take the next phone call. All right, we don't have that. Let's go to Keith in Rochester. Hi, Keith. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
I just want to give you three that I think should be in that top 10 performances. We got the comeback, which you've already mentioned, and the Raiders game.
Yep.
Game. And the other one is the San Fran game, where they over 1,000 yards total offense between the two offenses.
Yes. Now, Keith, listen, that's great, but we're really asking more for individual best performances.
Well, those are sort of team performances. I'd like better than individual, but...
Oh, I know that, but I'm just asking if you have an individual. That was more of the topic, is my point. Do you have one?
Go back to Joe Ferguson throwing the Hail Mary.
Rolling hooks.
There you go.
Against New England.
You got it.
Thank you.
I was sitting there, and my friend was whipping me with like a wine flask. He was like, oh, I can't believe it. All the fans had left, and we had our season tickets, and it was like maybe about 10,000 people left in the stadium at that point.
That's awesome. I don't think they were even that good that year, but that was a big win.
Oh, that's just a good memory. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Out of them.
Yep, no doubt about it. Does that amaze you that they say these and I can come up with these games and when they were and who was involved?
It doesn't amaze me because you've done things. I'm telling you, it's like
that's hardcore. I grew up like that.
I expect you to know all this.
Thank
stuff.
You. There was a joke after that. So Ferguson drops back. He throws this Hail Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Roland Hooks catches it for the touchdown in the end zone. They beat New England on the last play of the game. This is the early 80s, right? And then you remember the old Rolaids commercials. How do you spell relief? Rolaids. Okay, that's Rolaids. Rolaids, right? Spells relief. The joke was, how do you spell relief? Roland hooks. Rolling hooks. That's how you spell relief. That was the joke that came out of that.
Terrible.
Yeah. Individual performances we're looking for. Let's go, Josh. What's going on, buddy?
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Love the show. On the theme of game day traditions, so there's been a group of 16 of us who all sit together and had seasons for quite some time. Everyone usually rolls up to my house around 7:30. We're off by 8. Saturday nights, or it's about Christmas Eve, basically every 8 Saturdays a year, where we're all just shopping and getting what we need to grill and drink, et cetera, for the following day. Now, every game, I wear a pair of Zubas that I have that mean a lot to me due to the fact that they're my father's, who unfortunately is no longer with us. But my parents went to 2 out of the 4 Super Bowls, and I'm 31, so I do remember them, just not as vividly as I'd like to.
Right.
But they were at Pasadena and Minnesota. And I actually still have pictures of my dad wearing the same Zubas at the Super Bowls that I wear every Sunday. So they have a lot of history and mean a lot to me, obviously.
That is really cool. So do you go to the games every Sunday, you said, or are you watch them?
Yeah, we've had seasons for a while, so I'm at every single home game and usually one away game a year.
That's pretty cool. How long does your family go back with season tickets?
My parents had them up until my sister and I were about 8.
Okay.
And then they got rid of them. And then my buddies and I, we've had them now for around, I want to say, 9 years.
Very cool. Very cool. Thank you. I hope you watch those Zubaz every week, though.
Oh, yeah.
That's the question you pose. There are guys who do that. They wear the same stuff without washing if they're on a winning streak, right?
In
sports.
That's like the guys that Fitz used to do this. He was like, man, I'm not cutting my I don't even remember why he wouldn't cut his beard, but he's like, Fitz, you need to cut that. It's nasty. But he just didn't want to do it during the season for whatever reason. It was some superstition. It's ridiculous.
Jake says, listening now, you're too funny bragging about how good your memory is. You're making Donald feel weird. Do you feel weird?
No, not at all.
I think it's cool. I am going to brag about how good my memory is. Listen, by the way, I'm not.
He's not bragging at all because he's done some other things. It's like, wait, what, Sal? Like, what are you doing in your life, man?
I mean, I can't run past McCourty for a touchdown. You can,
right?
But I can tell you what game the Bills played in 1985 when they were 2-14, and a guy ran for 2 touchdowns, I guess.
Yeah.
Everybody's got their own thing, right?
Everybody has their own thing.
No, it's cool. We like doing that here. And by the way, sometimes I'm wrong. Like, I might recall a game and I'm like, oh no, because man, Donald's been 44 years I've been on this earth. I've been watching the Bills like that for 35 years, no, 40 years, whatever, in between that period. These things run together sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, and you think about a game and you're like, oh, no, that was another game.
I played in games and they run together.
I can imagine.
You know, so
if someone said to you, hey, remember that Cleveland game? And you started recalling, you're like, oh, no, wait, that's the other Cleveland game. Maybe.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, it happens all the time.
Yeah. And that's not not to make light of it. That's not because of like getting hit in the head. You just
you just
play so many games.
So many games, and then you've gone to so many games. There's so much that's going on. It just runs together on you.
There's a lot of Bills fans like that, by the way, who can call those things up, and we just long for the days we can remember some of these other individual performances that matter in a playoff situation like we have had so many times. Dave in Virginia, hi Dave. What's going on? You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
Good. Mine's not an individual performance. It's more goes along with your traditions you were talking about.
Yeah.
The Kansas City home opener, I think 2007, 8, something like that.
A home opener. Oh, I thought you were talking about the one Donald played out there. Was it?
No, we beat up one.
You're right, though. I remember that game. That was like the second game of the year, right?
Yeah. I don't know exactly what week it was, but right. I know it was the home opener that year.
Yep.
Anyway, load up the tailgate. Haven't done it in a while at that point, so I didn't remember spatula, so I'm going through my car looking for something to use as a spatula to flip the burgers. And there's one thing every Buffalonian still has in their car in September. It's a snow brush. So that's my new home opener tradition, using a snow brush as a spatula.
A snow brush during wow. A snow brush as a spatula for the home opener.
Now,
yeah.
The snow brush is...
Came back and we won. It was a good game. So that became the thing.
I'm looking it up right now. I think it was 2012. But I'm going to take a look here. Kansas City, Buffalo, week 2. Bills won 35-17. If I remember right, CJ had a really nice game that day.
I'm talking about what year?
2012.
Right.
Oh, 2012.
The game too much. I just know it was a fun one.
Oh, there you go. All right, man. Thank you. I appreciate the phone call. 803-0550, 888-550-2550. Trying to think teams you like. Like, do you have a favorite Yankees moment? Do you have a favorite moment of a team you like? Like, you know what? I follow this one team, and this one moment always stands out. Well, no, any team you like,
so,
Giants, anything.
See, I can't, like, recite the exact, like,
sure,
time and
sure.
things like that. Like, you
can. Sure.
But, I mean,
like a Jeter
growing up
or
a Knicks, yeah, Knicks and Yankees, and even the Giants. As a Knicks fan growing up, especially, like, when Allen Houston and those guys and Sprewell and those, I mean, they used to hit some big-time shots, especially Allen Houston. And I remember good and bad. I remember when they lost to the Spurs, which was like in the finals, which was – that might have been like 2000 or something like that. They lost to the Spurs. In the same year, ironically, the Yankees played the Mets in the World Series in 2000, Subway Series, and the Yankees end up beating the Mets. But Derek Jeter, when he flipped it, like he caught it off the bounce and flipped it to the,
Oakland
to
A's.
The catcher. Yeah, against the Oakland A's. Big time moment. I mean, I can't recite moments like you can.
No, that's okay, but those are things that stand out to you.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about your teams,
mm-hmm.
you're like, yeah, I remember that moment, right? That's pretty cool. I went to that Subway Series. My college roommate, to this day, he's the video scouting director. I believe that's his title for the New York Mets. But he was in the organization. He wasn't quite at that level at the time. Mm-hmm. And we were in New York that weekend for a wedding, and he says, Sal, I can go to all these games. At the time, I'd never been to Yankee Stadium. He goes, do you want to go to the game tonight? It's Subway Series, dude. It's Mets Yankees.
Yeah.
He has tickets. And I'm like, what? Am I going to say no, right? So I go to the game, Donald. The only time I ever went to old Yankee Stadium, true story, was Subway Series, Yankees Mets, and it was the game where Roger Clemens threw the bat at Mike Piazza.
Really?
It was that game. That's the only game I ever went to old Yankee Stadium for.
You only went to one game at old
game.
Yankee Stadium?
That's only one. Yeah, I've been to this Yankee Stadium once, but I've been to old Yankee Stadium once.
Wow.
That was it. You used to go all the time?
We would go, especially when I played baseball, they would take us to a Yankee game every year.
Well, it's 6 hours away. I mean, a drive, you know, I mean.
Yeah, for you, yeah.
So it'd be tough to go, but I should have gone more than that.
Yeah.
But I didn't. But that's the only time I ever went to old Yankee Stadium. And I thought there was going to be a riot in the stands that night after Clemens threw that bat at Piazza. I'm telling you, it was crazy. 803-0550, the number to jump on board. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll take more of your phone calls. And at 1 o'clock, we got Kim Jones from NFL Network here on the John Murphy Show. Stay tuned.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
I committed the ultimate sin in radio about 15 minutes ago. I teased something and I never talked about it the next segment. I can't do that. That's
that the
ultimate
sin.
Yes, don't ever do that. Radio hosts out there, if you tease something, you got to come back with it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you don't tease it and say, unless you're going to say later in the program.
Exactly.
Right? But, I made it seem like I was going to talk about it right away.
Right away.
And I didn't, and I'm really sorry about that. But thanks for tuning in and holding on if you did. And it really, and I apologize to you because I wanted you to talk about your dad and tailgating, man. Your dad and his family, your family, grilling before games. When you played here, I joined that tailgate once. It was pretty special.
Yeah, so, you know, I come from a family of, like, they will find an event to throw a party. It doesn't matter what it is. They will find an event to throw a major party. So, like, we already are planning this Mayweather-McGregor fight. My father, anytime there was a Mayweather fight, we'd have this huge cookout, 200, 300 people in his backyard. They set up this 100-foot projector in the backyard, and we watched a fight, all types of alcohol and food and everything, right? And so when I was young, we would go to this game. It was between two HBCU schools, which is historically black college university. Yeah. We would go to these games called the Whitney Young Classic, and it would always be a different school, and it was a huge tailgate, right? And so, you know, you have all of the frats out there doing their different step routines and all of this stuff. So we would, like, every – and I'm talking young. Like, I was, like, 8, 9 years old. It was at the old Giant Stadium every year, the Whitney Young Classic. We would go, and we would take a DJ, all types of food. And my father and these guys, my uncles, would do it all for free, right? And so we would have these huge parties in the parking lot, hundreds if not thousands of people partying with us in the parking lot. Everybody's drinking and having fun. And we didn't do it for a long time. We did it for a good, you know, 6, 7 years in a row, and then we didn't do it until I got into the pros. And then when I got here, it was like, man, we got to go up to Buffalo and throw these big parties. And my uncle builds these grills, and I'm talking major, major grills that he pulls on a trailer. I'm talking, when you see these grills, you would be like, wow. Like
the grill they had there that day was huge.
It's huge. And he built Yeah, he builds them.
Wow.
And he builds them, and he sells them for $5,000, $10,000 a pop.
Crazy. Right?
And so, you know, they had this big blow-up thing of me with my number on it and all of that stuff.
That's what,
like,
I remember
in
the most.
Uniform. Yeah, the big blow-up thing.
They have a big, like, this thing was like 20 feet high.
Yeah.
It was a blow-up balloon, essentially.
Right.
Air, made of air, of Donald Jones and his number 19 jersey.
And my number 19 jersey. And they would just party out in the parking lot with all of the Bills fans, right? So he still says to this day, like, man, we had so many fans ourselves. Obviously, you had fans because you were playing, but we had fans because we would party every
That's
week.
That's amazing.
You know, and I remember the one thing, you know, they would come into, so obviously the fan or our families would all sit in a suite. My dad had like 2 tickets to come up into the suite after the game. He brought like 30 people with him, just random fans, drunk random fans into the family suite. And I remember the next day, everybody here was like, hey, man, you got to tell your dad to chill out. And I'm like, what'd he do? And they're like, he brought all of these drunk random people into the family suite. And they sent me a letter and everything, like, the family suite is for family members only, not for random fans.
Oh,
and I
gosh.
Had to call my father, like, dude, y'all can't do that. And he was like, oh, my bad. Like, it's no my bad. Like, y'all can't do that.
The team sent you a letter?
Yeah,
the
team sent me a letter. Like, you can't do that. Your family is only, like, only the family member is allowed in the family suite. But he just has a lot of fun. I still get to I went to Duff's one day.
Yep.
And there was a guy that was in there, and he was like, hey, man, I used to party with your dad every week. And they still – last year they came up to a game.
That's awesome. So they still come up.
They're going to come up at least one game this year.
That's great. Yeah. So look for – what's your dad's name?
Donald.
Okay, look for Donald Sr.
The second. He's junior.
The big grill.
I'm the third.
And maybe he still has the blow-up. I really don't know.
They still have it all. They still have all of that.
That's awesome.
Now, he's not going to blow that thing up, but, you know, they used to throw the biggest tailgates in the parking lot.
That's very cool. Let's get to somebody here, Reggie, before we go to the break. Hi, Reggie. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, what's going on, Sal and Donald Jr.? I got just a real quick quirky thing that I do for tailgates that I've been doing forever. It's just I have to listen to the Stones. On the way to Buffalo, it's just nonstop Rolling Stones. It's just the way I've been doing it forever. And
any particular album or playlist?
Actually, just random. I just put the iPod on random, and that just gets me in the mood and it fires me up, kind of. Even when it's not the Bills season, if I hear a song on the radio, it makes me think of the Bills. So, but my call was about performances, and Stevie Johnson, when him and Donald went up to Cincinnati and they played the Bengals, it was Ocho Cinco was, I think, Robin, and T.O. was Batman, but it was all Stevie Johnson that day. He had like 140 yards, three touchdowns. I even think Donald had a reach.
That was my first touchdown.
70 yards.
In the NFL, yeah.
That game really stands out because that was the game where he had the, you know, are you serious?
Yeah, and, why so serious?
I mean, he just blew it up. The whole team played. Well, I think we had like 49 points that day.
We came back. We were losing in the first half when we came back. They had us like 27-7 or something, 28-7 or something like that. And we came back in the second half. I scored right before the half, and Stevie went off for like three touchdowns. The next game was against the Steelers, where he dropped like six passes, you know. So we had that great game where he blew up and became Stevie Johnson. The next game.
Was the next game the game where he dropped the overtime pass?
Yes. That was the very next game.
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, but good memories, man, and appreciate talking to you guys.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it. All right, Kim Jones of NFL Network. We're going to check in on the Jets and the Giants and get her thoughts on the 2017 Buffalo Bills. We like having Kim on the program. My first chance to get a talk with Kim about, you know, what's going on with the Bills and what she's covering down there in the New York area as well. If you're on hold, stick around. We'll get to you. We'll get to your thoughts on the best individual performances in Bills history in your mind. And how hardcore are you? What do? Before games, during the week, how hardcore do you get with the Bills here on the John Murphy Show?
Radio Network Sports Update.
Let's take a look around the sports world and what's going on. There is a report that Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott may face some discipline, including possibly a short suspension. This stemming from the situation he had, I believe it was his girlfriend, a domestic type of situation he had a couple of years ago that was being investigated, or last year, I should say. And it has not been completely resolved. The league is still looking into it. So there's a report that he could face some disciplinary action from the league, including possibly a short suspension. So we'll stay on top of that, of course, and we'll figure out what's going on there as we go towards the 2017 season. By the way, the Cowboys open training camp next week because they're playing in the Hall of Fame game against the Arizona Cardinals. Bad news for us, Donald. Michael Pineda, Yankees pitcher, UCL tear. He did tear ligaments. Tommy John surgery is recommended. Looks like he's going to be out for the year no matter what, but he is getting a second opinion to check on that. Boy, second half of baseball starts tonight, Yankees and Red Sox, and here we go. Pineda looks like he's going to be out. They're going to start off with the Red Sox, that's right. Red Sox, speaking of them, they designate Pablo Sandoval for assignment. Boy, boy, what happened to that guy? He just has not been able to hit. But Pablo Sandoval designated for assignment by the Red Sox. And the Sabres announced the return of the Prospects Challenge. The Prospects Challenge, of course, a chance for you to see the Sabres' young prospects against some other teams' young prospects right here at Harbor Center. They're going to do it the weekend of the Bills' home opener and the Bills' opener, but not that day. Like a Friday, Saturday, Monday, around there. So you're good to go. You can see Sabres' prospects. You can see the Bills take on the Jets. All of that is going to be happening. Sal Capaccio here filling in for Murph today. Donald Jones sitting next to me as always. And we're going to go right out to the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway Eat Fresh. One of our favorite people to talk to. And I have to be honest, I cheated this week. I said, we need to get Kim Jones on because I'm so jealous, Donald. You and Murph always get to talk to Kim on the radio. I only see her when she comes to town to cover some things, but now she's on the radio, and I get my chance to talk with Kim Jones of NFL Network. What's going on, Kim? It's Sal and Donald.
That's a lot of pressure, Sal. How are you guys?
We're doing awesome here. How are you doing down there, and how's your summer been so far? Are you doing anything exciting?
I'm great. I'm busy. I'm working. I do radio shows at The Fan in the summer, and, of course, NFL Network, although that's been slow for the last couple weeks, and we'll pick up again next week, so all's good.
All right, well, that's good, and we're going to be partners there soon. Entercom at WGR and CBS owns The Fan, so everybody's going to be working together. We're going to be one big happy family soon.
Oh, there you go. That's great.
So it's good to have you on here, and Donald and I, you know, we wanted to get a perspective on the Jets and Giants teams you cover, but first question I have is, really, honestly, how much will we see you in national media here in Buffalo because of the changeover? I mean, Rex Ryan was a big storyline. That's why there was a lot of national coverage. But how much does the dynamic change here in Buffalo going from Rex Ryan to Sean McDermott as far as exposure and national coverage?
Well, the first thing I'd say is if you win, the media is going to be there. And I would say that about any franchise. So that, to me, it would be first and foremost. There's no doubt Rex was a draw. He was here in New York as well, even though I understand the New York City metropolitan area is a little bit different media-wise. I get that. But Rex draws in attention deliberately, as we know, and sometimes not as deliberately. But I think if the Bills get back on the winning track, that'll be a very good thing. I was actually supposed to come up one day in the spring, and it happened to be a time that the Bills didn't have access. I believe they had a full week off from OTAs, so it didn't work out for my schedule. But I'll be there at some point during training camp for sure.
Now, Kim, as you guys, because you obviously cover, I guess, the Northeast, what are some of the headlines that you guys are looking at when it comes to the Bills?
Oh, well, I mean, I think that the impact that Coach McDermott makes, I think obviously it's a team with a lot of talent, couldn't put it together. There were a lot of sort of the Rex Ryan ups and downs in Buffalo that he didn't iron out some of that stuff from his time with the Jets. So I think just the operation overall and obviously Tyrod and his weapons and can Sammy stay healthy and what impact does Reggie Ragland have and Jack Lawson, presumably healthy, hopefully for the whole season and all that good stuff. So I would say that probably, in terms of Buffalo, would be my short list off the top of my head.
Now, obviously, there was a situation last week with Adolphus Washington, but otherwise, really, just as the Bills scripted, a very boring offseason, which has kind of been away from the script for the last couple of years. And I think that's just the way the team likes it. And, Kim, like you're there from a national perspective. That can only be good for a team like the Bills that has really gone through some headlines they don't want to go through, some upheaval over the last few years. A boring offseason, just really fly under the radar. I think that's the way they want it up here in Buffalo. And I think even though it might not resonate on the national scene, that might bode well for this team.
Sure. Listen, you guys know this as well as I. It comes down to winning. And had Rex been able to win, you live with a lot of the other stuff. Sometimes you laugh more at the other stuff. You get a kick out of it. You say, see, the players can be themselves. But sometimes Rex Ryan has trusted players too much. Sometimes he has encouraged too much of have some fun atmosphere. And it doesn't work. And when it doesn't work, teams ultimately almost – certainly in the NFL, go the opposite way in terms of a head coach, a personality, and sort of a culture. So that does not surprise me. It's buttoned up, and I think you used the word boring. I'm not going to use that word. I haven't been there, but you're right. That they usually make that left turn, if you will, after one regime leaves, and then you hope this regime obviously can win.
Now, Kim, what do you think about Tyrod Taylor and his contract situation and him just being here and moving forward with this team?
Donald, you guys would know a whole lot better than I. I can tell you I'm a big Tyrod Taylor fan. Mm-hmm. I love the skills that he brings to a field. He's fun to watch. He's effective. He's got a great arm, got great legs, got some great weapons. I'm also a big LeSean McCoy fan. So I like a lot of what he has to offer. I think he can win. I think you can win with him. And clearly it looks like the Bills think they can win with him, and I hope they do. But in terms of breaking down his game, you would certainly know better than I, except mm-hmm. I can tell you I'm a fan of his.
Well, I'll tell you this, Kim. You know, one of the things that really happened here that I think that people have taken notice of is what Sean McDermott and the rest of the regime and the way they've been built. You know, this is not Ralph Wilson's Bills anymore. We had an older regime many times in the past. You know, you're looking at it, you got a 43-year-old head coach, you have a 40-year-old general manager in Brandon Bean, a 37-year-old assistant GM in Joe Shane. I mean, is there a sense nationally that the Bills really have really made a complete makeover and they are kind of going in a different direction under Terry and Kim Pegula after a few years of ownership now?
Well, I mean, it's certainly just by what you just mentioned, Sal, I would 100% agree, a complete makeover, new people in new places, and like you said, younger people in many cases in new places. So I think that's all fair. Yeah, I think it would be hard to argue otherwise. Certainly new. And I'll sound like a broken record, but I won't apologize for that because all that matters is that you win.
Yeah, we get that.
There's a lot of other style points, a lot of other things that we talk about, a lot of other things that aren't important. I don't care. You could ask me about any team, and my response would be, are they going to win? Because that's ultimately what's important.
Now, Kim, we want to take it down to one of the teams that's in your neck of the woods in the Jets. And it seems like they've been tanking. Don't really know what's going on down there. But, you know, what's your census, your overall census on the Jets and what they're doing?
Well, it's a total rebuild for the Jets. They're not doing a half rebuild. They're not rebuilding, but bringing in a couple veteran free agents. In fact, they tore it down when it came to veterans. Brandon Marshall asked for his release. He realized early on what was going on. But other veterans like David Harris, Eric Decker, obviously Darrell Revis, they didn't necessarily ask, but they were released. It's over for the veterans that we are used to seeing with the New York Jets, with few exceptions, a couple of those exceptions being Sheldon Richardson, who's in a contract year, Muhammad Wilkerson, who signed a big contract, but the Jets can get out of it after this season if they choose to. So it is a youth movement. Some of their youth would be players that any team in the league could use, and I would start with Jamal Adams, who is an absolutely terrific safety out of LSU. He would help almost any defense you could name for me. Other guys are far more untested and unproven. Marcus May will start next to him at safety. He's coming off injury. How's he? I might have that one wrong. He may not be one of the ones coming off injury, but how does he play next to Adams? We don't know that. We have no idea. And the big question, of course, is at quarterback, who starts and how does it go?
Well, let's talk about that quarterback situation. You have Hackenberg, you have Petty, you have McCown. Will they defer to the veteran? Will this be an all-out competition? How do you see this thing playing out?
I think it will be a training camp competition. I think the Jets have to have a training camp competition at this point. I'm not sure why you would bring in Josh McCown and hand him the job. I think they will hope for a healthier quarterback room than they had a year ago. And I think most of all, they will hope that Christian Hackenberg wins the job. If he does not, I do think at some point in this season, fairly early on perhaps, you will see him and you will see the Jets get a look at him. I have said since the draft when the Jets were not going to take a quarterback in this draft that the quarterback they will learn about this season, guys, is Hackenberg. They will leave 2017 knowing if he is their quarterback going forward or if he is not. Obviously, for their sake, if he is, then they have solved, at least in the short term, a battle that they have found very difficult to solve. If he is not, they will hope that in next year's draft they can find a franchise quarterback.
Kim Jones joining us. You can find her on NFL Network, NFL Total Access, NFL Game Day. She's in the morning there, a contributor there, WFAN radio host. You can also follow her on Twitter, at Kim Jones Sports. Todd Bowles, how hot is his seat considering everything, and is it fair to have him on the hot seat right now, Kim?
I'm not convinced he is. I'm not convinced he or Mike Maccagnan's on the hot seat. Now, when I say that on WFAN, my co-host or sometimes a caller will say, well, what if he goes 2-14? Well, 2-14 is an absolute disaster.
Right.
So it's hard for me to say what happens if the Jets go 2-14. If the Jets go 5-11 and show some progress with the young players, find out what they need to at the quarterback position, it is not in my mind out of the realm of possibility Todd Bowles comes back. I do not believe Woody Johnson, and now it'll be his brother Christopher running the show with Woody as an ambassador now.
Right.
But there is no way that they are tearing all of this down and expecting a winning record and more than that. That you can't. It wouldn't be fair. And you're right. That would be asking the impossible of a head coach. But I am not convinced he's on the hot seat. I think they are both, Maccagnan and Bowles, safe for another year, barring some sort of a just disastrous performance, or B, real locker room issues where a change would be necessary.
Now, as we talk about Todd Bowles and his situation and then the quarterback situation, Kim, are we looking at some sort of a power struggle between management and the head coach and who wants who to play quarterback?
No. No, we're not. I think it's going to be a competition in training camp. I think either McCown or Hackenberg will win it. And if McCown wins it, they'll start the season, as you know, in Buffalo. I believe they then go to Oakland. Mm-hmm. They then open, I believe, at home against the Dolphins. So it could be a tricky opening few weeks for the New York Jets, no matter who's at quarterback. And if it's McCown, soon after that stretch, you could see Hackenberg being given the reins simply because they do have to find out about Christian Hackenberg this season.
Let's go to the other team at MetLife, Kim. Eli Manning, obviously, you know, he comes in with that great 2004 quarterback class. We know Ben Roethlisberger has already kind of quasi talked about retirement here and there. You can't have many years left on Eli Manning. What is the situation with New York as far as the Giants are concerned, their window of opportunity, how they want to play and approach things? They spent a bunch of money last year. Where do you see the Giants heading in 2017?
Well, they hope back to the playoffs where they can actually win a game this time. Eli has 3 years left contract-wise. He believes he has more than that left in terms of playing. He never gets hurt. He is incredibly durable. He does take some big hits. He has also certainly learned over the years, and we all see it in most games, where he avoids the big hits. He's a smart guy, so he doesn't take too many huge hits, and he has certainly avoided injury. Where are they headed? I mean, they really – really need their offense to catch up to the defense, because their defense was Super Bowl caliber a year ago. Their offense scored one more point than the 49ers. So somewhere along the way, the franchise quarterback, the out-of-this-world receiver, the promising first-round draft pick, Brandon Marshall, and Shane Vereen and Sterling Shepard and the offensive line have to find a way to be better so that they can help this team get where it wants to go. The defense does its part on this team now. Now it's up to Eli and the offense.
Now, Kim, what about the I want to get over to Odell Beckham in a second, but I want to talk to you about their backup quarterback situation. Is there an open competition for the backup quarterback situation, or has Geno Smith taken that over?
I think it's open between Josh Johnson and Geno Smith. It would not surprise me if Geno wins it. He is coming off that ACL, but he was doing enough stuff late this spring that it certainly looks like he'll be ready for training camp. Josh Johnson knows the offense. He's been here now for a little while, so he would have that advantage. But I'll tell you what, guys, Geno Smith threw some of the best balls I saw all spring in East Rutherford. He has a terrific arm. He always has. And I've asked Giants people, you know, is this a, you know, what do we have to lose situation? Because it certainly seems that way. And every time I've been told by different people, no, that they really like Geno. They like his football acumen. They believe he is very hungry. And he has been very impressive there. So, yeah, to answer your question, Donald, it would not surprise me at all if Geno's the backup.
The guy we didn't talk about, though, is Davis Webb. Now, here's the fifth quarterback taken off the board, mm-hmm. goes to the Giants. I mean, what's the timeline on Davis Webb? Are there people in that building, do you think, who really kind of want to speed up his progress? Like you said, Eli is not just going to hand over that job anytime sooner. Now, what do they think about Davis Webb?
No, it wouldn't surprise me if Davis Webb doesn't play for years.
Okay.
He was a third-round pick. That was the earliest the Giants were kind of in the market for a quarterback. They were surprised he was still there, and they took him. No, I don't think there's any hurry to see him. He's been impressive so far from what I've been told, but I don't believe there's any sort of pressure to see him anytime soon.
Now, you talked about the out-of-world wide receiver in Odell Beckham. What's going on with his contract situation and the Giants moving forward? Do they even want to have him and deal with all of his antics off the field moving forward? Like, what's going on with him?
Any team in the league, including yours, would open the door to Odell Beckham Jr. yes. and ask him to make those plays and beat the corners and make the turn a slant into a 60-yard touchdown once in a while. Odell has his last year of his contract coming up, but the Giants have, of course, already picked up the option year for next season. Mm-hmm. So he is in the Aaron Donald camp in terms of timeline.
Right.
And Donald, of course, expecting the extension, I believe. I don't ever see the Rams, but it certainly sounds like his would be sooner than Odell's. My guess would be the Giants, perhaps after this season, would extend Odell Beckham Jr. I don't necessarily see it happening before then. But John Mara has been clear that he wants Odell to be a Giant for life. Odell's response to that was, he and I are on the same page. So in terms of the contract situation, I think that's where that stands at this point.
Kim, thank you very much. We look forward to seeing you in Pittsburgh at St. John Fisher. As you know, a great venue for training camp. And we love seeing you out there when you come up to cover the team. I know Rex isn't here, but like you said, if this team starts winning, we'll see a lot more of you this year as well.
Thank you so much, guys. Take care.
All right, that is Kim Jones of NFL Network. Thank you very much for joining us. Follow her on Twitter, at Kim Jones Sports. What do you think about Odell's contract and rumblings that maybe the Giants just aren't going to buy in yet, and they want to kind of maybe tell them to tone it down before they commit big money to him.
I mean, I know they – it's just like she said. Like, I know anybody will want him to tone it down a little bit, especially being in the New York market. That's a huge market. But at the end of the day, this guy produces for you on the football field. Now, he had a bad game in the playoffs, mm-hmm. And he's had some bad games for them, especially early in the season where he had a lot of drops. But this guy produces for them, you know. And so I think, yeah, they want to have him long term. It's hard to find receivers that can produce week in and week out and be as good as he has been for them since he's been there.
I agree with you. At the end of the day, he is one of the best players in this league.
Right.
Period.
Period.
And you just don't walk away from guys like that.
You can't.
You deal with their antics.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
With all of that, you can deal with acting kind of strange on the sidelines and kicking a kicking net.
And things like that.
You can deal with that stuff at the end of the day if you're that good.
Right. And what you do is you bring in a guy like a Brandon Marshall. You bring in guys around him that you feel like can really help to mold him into the right pro that you might want him to be. But if this dude is producing for you on the field, that's all you can do. Bring the right leaders around him. You can't walk away from that guy. The fan base would be like, what? Who's going to be the number one receiver now?
Right. And, I mean, you know, the situation here in Buffalo, you have Sammy Watkins, same draft class,
mm-hmm.
who just hasn't been able to stay on the field enough for people to be convinced and the organization to be convinced that they should give him that big money. But we go back to all the time. We have said this all week. If Sammy starts to play and puts up numbers like and impacts games like Odell Beckham,
right.
guess what's going to happen? He's going to get his money.
He's going to get his money. They will do whatever they have to do to keep him here.
They'll keep him. They'll pay him. They'll do what they have to do, franchise tag him. Because if you're that level player, you don't let people walk away.
You don't. I'm sorry. You
can't. And look, in this league, it goes back to some of the things we talked about earlier this week with money and pay and stuff like that. In the NFL, primarily, up until a certain point, but for the most part, the teams have all the leverage over the players.
Yes, they do.
I mean, they have mechanisms in place all over, whether it be a franchise tag, a transition tag, a 50-year option,
right.
another franchise tag, whatever it is, mm-hmm. teams generally have the right and control players much more than players have. You do get situations where they don't and players want out, and there's a lot. I mean, Josh Norman a couple years ago finally got to a point where Carolina said, okay, he just wants too much. We cannot find an amicable solution to this.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to let him go. Maybe Kirk Cousins. But even if Kirk Cousins leaves Washington, after this year, Donald, they still controlled him for 2 years after the saga began.
Right. You know, I mean, this thing with Sammy Watkins, it was the same as Tyrod Taylor. He's in the same position now. You know,
right.
the team is in the same position. They have structured the contract in the way where, listen, you prove it to us. At the end of the day, you go out there and you prove it to us, and then we'll decide then if we want to pay you or not. But the team has all of the control. They have all of the leverage. They did over Tyrod Taylor, and they do over Sammy Watkins. For people who, when they decided not to pick up the fifth-year option and everybody was upset here in Western New York, especially here in Buffalo, it was like, listen, they still control their destiny. They still can keep him if they want to. All they have to do is place the franchise tag on him.
That's right. And it might cost them a few more $1 million.
Right.
But you know what? That's they're banking on, okay, but we would rather do that than commit money to a guy that if he doesn't stay healthy,
right.
then we're out of that money for a guy who's not playing.
Mm-hmm.
And because remember, the fifth-year option is guaranteed for injury.
Right.
Then if we can pay a few more $1 million just to have an insurance that we know that he played on the field. And look, everybody in this organization, make no mistake about it, everybody in this organization wants Sammy Watkins to be healthy and be an impactful player and to stay in Buffalo for another decade. That's the ideal situation for everybody here.
That's what right. Everybody will want that. If he's on the field healthy, I mean, he's going to be one of the best. He's talented. You talk about just talent. He is one of the best talented receivers in the NFL. If he can stay on the field and stay healthy, everybody will want him here. This organization will want him here. So for the question I have for you, Sal, we get this somebody tweeted me, Thomas Joseph. They said, why would the Giants allow Brandon Marshall anywhere near Odell Beckham Jr.? He's anything but a leader.
That's interesting. I don't think Brandon Marshall, when I think about him now, I think of him much differently than I think of him when he was in Chicago. I think Brandon Marshall, Denver. Yeah, or Denver. I think Brandon Marshall has grown up and matured.
Mm-hmm.
There's still some quirky things about him. There's no doubt about that. But I actually think Odell Beckham could maybe learn a few things from Brandon Marshall in the way he has overcome and become more of a professional in his career. That's the way I look at it.
That's the way I look at it, you know, because you have a guy who went through a lot of things when he was younger, when he was in Denver, when he was in Chicago. He even said some things last year, but they were losing. Like, they were really, truly, truly losing, and he was just upset. But at the end of the day, this guy is much older, a lot more mature. He's doing things a lot different now, and he understands that he's on a team that is talented enough really to challenge for a Super Bowl run, you know, in that Giants team. And so, yeah, he would love to be next to Odell Beckham Jr. He's even said it. Look, I understand my position on this team. I understand that I am the vet now on the team, and I have to be a leader. And I think he's really going to play that role there.
I've actually grown to respect Brandon Marshall a lot. Mm-hmm. I was not a big Brandon Marshall fan years ago.
Right.
There was maybe like an E60 on him or something. There was one of those sports shows where they go in detail and they do one of those big exposés on him.
Right.
And I really learned a lot about his disease is what he had. We had to kind of treat it, you know, and it's something he had to overcome a lot of. And it was, he had a lot of mental issues going on in his head.
Yeah.
And I think that he has learned in his life how to control that, how to be a better person for that. He's made a lot of mistakes in the past. We know that. But I've grown to respect him, to be in the position he is in. And then when you watch him on TV, I actually think he's pretty good. He's on Inside the NFL. I like him.
Yeah, on Inside the NFL. First of all, as a receiver, I've always felt like he was one of the best in the game, one of the most underrated receivers in the game. Like the dude, man, he will drop some passes, but he makes some crazy catches for you, makes some crazy plays. But then, you know, he was dealing with the mental stuff.
And, isn't he a speaker on mental illness? I think he speaks on it too.
He's a
much
huge
like you do for what you've
disease.
Gone through.
Right, exactly. He is huge in that mental disease field, you know, and so. I think it's something that he has learned to overcome, but he is dealing with that. And it just goes to show you these people are – I mean, these guys, because you see them on TV playing and they're tough and all of that stuff, it doesn't mean that they're not human and they don't deal with things in their head. Just be people say, well, he's making, you know, $10 million a year. So what? The guy still has mental things that he's dealing with in his head. He still has, you know, heart disease or whatever it is that he has to deal with. He's dealing with the same issues that you deal with on a regular daily basis, even in his marriage and life, you know, and children. And so I'm glad that he's learned to overcome that stuff. And I do think that he has grown and matured and he is going to be a leader in that Giants.
And I think it's actually what they've been missing in New York. They're missing that bigger target type of guy that they maybe are. Eli can rely on to be that veteran. You know, I mean, who was it? Hakeem Nicks or whoever. They've had some guys there, but they never had a Marshall.
No, they didn't. Not at the receiver position. Right. Now they would have like big tight ends that can make plays for them, but not at the receiver position. So now, not since Plexico Burress.
And when they won the Super Bowl. You throw Shepard in the mix too, the kid they drafted a couple years ago.
And now Evan Engram.
Yeah, I mean, I think they could be a pretty explosive offense. And what did Kim talk about? Their defense was good.
Oh,
their offense was the team. We did earlier this week AFC teams who failed to make the playoffs. What are we talking about? NFC. This could be a team that really takes a step.
Now, they were in last year.
That's right.
But they had, remember, they took the trip down to Miami with Justin Bieber, and then
Thank
they had the horrible game.
Me. That's right.
But I think that is a team that can challenge for a Super Bowl run. I thought that last year, and I think they're good enough. They added the right pieces to really make a run at it this year.
That would be interesting to see, you know, in New York, though. I think it is going to be interesting to see the dynamic between Marshall and Odell. And look, I'll be the first to tell you, even though all these nice praises we just gave to Brandon Marshall, these are also types of personalities, Donald, that if things start going poorly, they can butt heads and they can really spin out of control.
Exactly.
These are big personalities. Anytime you put big personalities together in a locker room, as you know, if things start to go downhill a little bit, that's when the test really comes if you can overcome that together.
Man, you're talking about Odell Beckham's personality and then Brandon Marshall's personality?
If things start to go south, that's when you have to worry.
Right.
Right.
And then
I
couple
it.
That with Eli's personality if he has one.
That's right, no doubt. I'm glad you brought all this up, by the way, because it's a great segue into something I wanted to ask you about. When we come back, a Steelers wide receiver, Martavis Bryant, is not happy with his quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger. Mm-hmm. Ben had called Martavis out in public. Martavis is kind of calling Ben out in public, and they want to have a good old-fashioned meeting. And I'm interested in this about a player's perspective, where the line is on what you should talk about or shouldn't talk about with your teammates in public. We'll do that when we come back next on the John Murphy Show.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We thank Kim Jones of NFL Network joining us last segment. If you missed any of that, we'll have everything replayed for you in our John Murphy Show podcast, BuffaloBills.com. Make sure you're following us online on Twitter, at John Murphy Show. Also on demand at WGR550.com. We'll also, so many places you can go and listen to anything that you did not hear on the program. Sal Capaccio, Donald Jones here on a Friday afternoon with you on WGR and MSG. Murph back on Monday. He's gonna have a jump in his step when he comes back because he's been off for a few weeks. He's like, I'm ready to go. Let's go.
He better.
Be able to contain him?
It's been 3 weeks.
I know.
Now, I won't lie though. It's hard to come back after taking off.
I know
that
it
long.
Is sometimes, right?
It's hard to come
but
back.
But I've been in. Sometimes it is. I think in this job for me, it gives me a chance to recharge my batteries when I've been away for a little while. Like I don't.
When do you need to recharge your batteries?
That's true.
I mean,
I'm like the Energizer Bunny.
Yeah.
Right.
Like a Tesla, like plug you into the wall at night.
Donald, Ben Roethlisberger last year said about Martavis Bryant. Remember Martavis Bryant? He's been suspended a couple times by the NFL, substance issues, things like that. Ben Roethlisberger really went out of his way to apparently try to help him, reach out to him a couple years ago, and then last year he was suspended again. And Ben Roethlisberger basically said that he thinks that Martavis Bryant, this is back in last year, he said he thought that Martavis Bryant lied to him and that he felt let down by Martavis Bryant because he basically thought Bryant was going to be on the right track. He's going to do all the right things. He's getting himself back in the offense, back on the field, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So Roethlisberger kind of said critically and publicly, I think he lied to me. He let me down. Well, Martavis Bryant's kind of firing back a little bit right now. And he says he wants to have a sit-down man-to-man with Ben Roethlisberger. Quote, I feel like we need to do. I'm reading from ESPN.com right now. He says, we should have a man-to-man because some of the things he put out there about me, I kind of didn't agree with how he did it. So I want to sit down and hear his opinion man-to-man about why he did that. And to your point about guys going through stuff, he said at the time, this is a quote from Martavis Bryant, I was going through a lot of stuff. I wasn't really worried about his opinion at the time because there was just a lot of stuff going on. He's my brother. I love him. But at the same time, I have my own family outside of football. I have my own problems. I'm just not going to come up to you and open up to you about what's going on with my personal life. That's not how I am. We just didn't see eye to eye, but as far as right now, everything's great. So he's not saying I hate Ben Roethlisberger, but he's saying that I'm upset about the way he handled it. He shouldn't have done this publicly. He shouldn't have criticized me. I'd like to talk to him. My question to you, as a former player in the locker room, you know the way players think, and you're of age now where you're still close to a lot of these guys where there's you know how these things go.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the line for a player to talk about another player in an instance like this or anything else? And does that line change if you are someone like Ben Roethlisberger?
I don't think the line should change if you're someone like Ben Roethlisberger because, look, we're all teammates in this thing together, you know. So I don't care if you're Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady, whoever you are. At the end of the day, you need all of us to win. You can't win this thing by yourself, you know. So I think there's a couple of issues that really come into play when dealing with a situation like this. And I've talked about this on air with Murph. There are guys like Brandon Marshall that deal with things outside of football. Everybody has their own issues. Now, people forget where a lot of these guys come from. A lot of these guys come from areas where, I mean, there are things that you just couldn't even imagine unless you've been in that area or grown up in that type of environment. So just because these guys are now in the NFL does not mean that they still don't have those problems from back home. They don't have the stuff that they've grown up and seen and done and whatever it is. You know, like if you come from that environment, you've seen some stuff. You might have done some things, you know. So you deal with that in your mind. It's still in your mind. You still see it at night. You might dream about it, different things. So whatever it is that you do to help cope with that, smoke, drink, whatever it is, it's not like it's the right thing. But I think the league and individual teams need to do a better job of talking to their players and psychologists and all of that stuff and talking to the players and making sure that the players understand you have a place for us to talk to. Now, at the end of the day, players probably wouldn't go and talk to those people because you work for the team. But at least the teams need to put it out there. You can talk to somebody if you have some issues. That's one thing. Now, in terms of Ben Roethlisberger.
And by the way, to your point, I'm quite sure there's a difference between Lima, Ohio, where Ben Roethlisberger is from,
right,
and Calhoun Falls, South Carolina. Probably a much different demographic, life, culture, things like that. And to your point of you don't know exactly how someone has brought up and grown up. And I'm sure Ben Roethlisberger has interacted and been around people of all walks of life and socioeconomic backgrounds and things like that his entire life because of who he is and what he's done. But to your point, he doesn't know necessarily Martavis Bryant.
Exactly. You don't know the things that he's going through in his mind or at home or whatever that might be. Now, in terms of players speaking out publicly about their teammates, I don't care who you are, I think you need to talk to that player man to man first. Like, listen, if you're dealing with something and you're smoking or you're drinking or whatever it is, talk to me about it, and let's try to work this out together before you go out and publicly criticize one of your teammates, because we are teammates in this thing, all right? I am a grown man with a family just like you are a grown man with a family. Don't just go out and just dog me in the media because you feel like you're Ben Roethlisberger. And to your question, is it a difference because he's Ben Roethlisberger? No, I don't care how good you've been, the Super Bowls you've won. We're still all teammates in this thing together. You're not above anybody else. You know, now your status, you might be a superstar, all of that stuff, but you're not above me at all because we all need each other to win a Super Bowl. We're all in this thing together this year.
Not that there's a division, not that people are going to have to pick sides. Would the guys in the locker room kind of agree more with Martavis here?
Yeah. Yeah, because they would feel like, look, if you're criticizing him, now they might say, look, he needed to be criticized, but at the same time, you're criticizing him, you might do that to me as well. Like, don't do that to me. I would be upset if you did that to me, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, I think, you know, they need to talk to each other man-to-man, face-to-face. Look, this is what it is. Don't criticize. Don't talk about me in the public. If I want to talk about me, I can talk about myself. You don't talk about me, though.
Right.
You don't have that right, you know? And I don't care if you're Ben Roethlisberger or whoever you are on this team.
There is a great scene in the 30 for 30 made on the Bills for Super Bowls called The Four Falls of Buffalo,
right?
Great scene there. And when I say scene, you know, it's a documentary, but one of them is, if Bills fans remember, a lot of them will, and I think you've seen The Four Falls of Buffalo, but Jim Kelly at one time, well, he got hit in a game against the Colts, and he separated his shoulder.
Right.
Howard Ballard had missed the block, okay?
Right.
And he basically called him out and said, we got to make some changes at some positions. I'm not going to say what, but you guys can figure it out. He said that in a press conference, right? Shortly after that happened, Thurman Thomas goes on a TV show locally in Buffalo, and he says, they said, what's the problem with the Bills lately? And Thurman said, quarterback. Okay? And Thurman has said in this document, in the interview, he says, obviously, basically, I wasn't calling out Jim Kelly. I was trying to make it known, don't call out your teammates. How do you like it when someone calls you out?
Exactly.
So it advances the story. Bill Polian calls Thurman into the office. People who've seen 30 for 30 know what I'm talking about. This is great. Bill Polian calls Thurman into the office. You can't talk about Jim that way. Why are you calling your you need to apologize to Jim. Why are you calling your teammate out? Thurman looks at Bill Polian and says, have you spoken to Jim about calling other teammates out?
Right.
Because until you do that, I don't care.
Right. That's the truth.
And do you know what Bill Polian's response was?
You're right.
You're right.
That's
and he called
truth.
Jim in, and he called Thurman in.
Yeah.
And he looked at them both, and he sat him down, and he said, and this is why Bill Polian is one of the greatest general managers ever. He agreed with Thurman. He didn't take the, oh, this is what I need. He brought them both in. He sat him down. He said, look, we need you both to win.
Yeah.
We need you both. And you need to start acting like teammates, and this all stuff about criticizing each other, that's for the birds. That's gone now, starting today, right?
Right.
And they had this talk, and they're both in the room, and you know what happened starting after that? They started winning games, and they were best friends for life, and it didn't matter, and they started going to Super Bowls.
I mean, that's, don't call me out in the media. Like, talk to me. If you got a problem with me, talk to me about it. Don't go on TV or on the radio and say, well, you know, we got to fix this position or this guy needs to mature or things. No, don't do that. You feel like I need to mature, then come to me and say, look, man, you've been doing these things. You need to mature a little bit. You know, I'm not really feeling what you're doing. You need to mature a little bit. And I'll respect that a lot more than if you go on the media, because basically, yeah, it's in the public, but you're trying to dog me behind my back.
And I would think Martavis Bryant would think enough of Ben Roethlisberger that if he did come to him personally, he would you know, it would mean something to him, right?
Exactly. I mean, because here's the thing. That's the quarterback. So the quarterback, he has to throw you the ball. And Ben Roethlisberger's been through a lot. And, you know, that's another story. He's been through a lot. He's dealt with those things. So he knows how to handle those things. He's been in this league and around this league for a very long time and been successful. So, yeah, if he came to you man-to-man, face-to-face, and said, look, you need to improve upon this. You need to mature in these areas. And at the same time, you talk – don't just talk at me, but you talk to me. Like, you know, how's your family doing? You know, it seems like you're going through different things.
How about, is there anything I can do for you?
Like, what can I do to help you? Right, exactly.
Because I love you as a football player – second, a person first, but we need you on the football field, and that's not going to happen unless you're a better person and you're making the right choices.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Talk to me face-to-face, man-to-man, as like a person.
But what Ben Roethlisberger said even earlier this summer, Donald, was that Bryant had to, quote, win back everybody's trust. He said that publicly, and that's, I'm sure, not rubbing Bryant the right way. Bryant said they have not talked yet. Hopefully, quote, it will be before the season starts. If not, that's fine. I'm still going to go out and perform and do what I have to do, be the best teammate I can be. It doesn't really matter. Man-to-man talk, you put it out there. Man-to-man, explain it to me what you mean. You know, with this guy on the field, they're a better team. He's not Antonio Brown, obviously.
Right.
But they already have a really good team. They already have a really good offense. And I think Ben Roethlisberger knows with this guy on the field, they can be a team that maybe challenges the Patriots in the AFC.
He's a weapon. The kid is good.
Yeah.
You know, Antonio Brown is one guy. He's one of the best in the league.
Yep.
But how much better can Antonio Brown be if you have this guy at the top of his game? Go talk to a man-to-man, face-to-face, and don't dog him in the media.
And then the one thing you never talk about is another man's money, right?
You definitely don't do that. Yo, don't check my pockets in the media. Wait, what? Don't talk about my money.
No, that's
don't talk about me. Don't talk about my money. Don't talk about my family.
That's right.
And we're good.
Good stuff. 803-0550, 888-550-2550. We are talking today about the top performances in Buffalo Bills history, single-game performances that you remember. Like, what's the performance that comes to your mind? You might, oh, my God, that was a great performance. Whether even it wasn't necessarily a statistically great performance, sometimes that happens. But MSG, Monday night, 9 p.m., the top 10 series continues with the best performances. I've seen the list. I can't reveal them. I've been sworn to secrecy. Jay Harris will beat me up if I reveal anything. But maybe, just maybe, one of them on there is Frank Reich's comeback in the greatest comeback in NFL history. And we will have Frank Reich on the phone at 2 p.m. He is currently the offensive coordinator of the Philadelphia Eagles. More with Donald Jones, me, Sal Capaccio, and you. Give us your call and your thought on the best performance in Bills history, individual that you remember, or how hardcore are you? Some rituals, some things you do, the way you act before games during the week with the Buffalo Bills here on the John Murphy Show.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
All right, what a surprise. So during the break, I walk outside, and in the field house, there's a big tour going on. There's, like, people just walking everywhere, right?
Right.
And I decided to take it upon myself because it's my last day here until Murph comes back. I'm like, if they fire me, what's going to happen, right? Yeah. I'm like, I open the door and say, come on in. Here's the control room. Here's the John Murphy Show. There's Donald Jones. This is what it looks like.
I mean, did you become the tour guide?
So I was like the tour guide. In fact,
I couldn't find who the tour guide was.
I have the flag. They have to follow the flag. You have this like flag you got to follow. There's the tour guide. I just use my head, really. That's all it is.
I just use my head.
Sal Capaccio here. Donald Jones. We'll take a phone call and then we'll bring couple of these people up here. They're on the tour. A couple of people wearing Bills gear here in town. All right, let's go to Keith. Hi, Keith. You're on the John Murphy Show. What's up?
With that steel trap mind of yours. You remember that big blockbuster trade that brought Peyton Manning and Cornelius Bennett to us? And
Whoa. Peyton Manning? What?
And Cornelius Bennett knocked him out of his first rookie game.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not true. Right. That's not true. Peyton Manning was drafted by the Colts way later than Cornelius Bennett came to the Bills. That trade you're talking about happened in 1987, and Peyton Manning didn't get drafted until 1998.
Okay, because I just thought my mind is like saying that Cornelius Bennett knocked him out of the game.
No, and who I think you're thinking of is Jeff George.
Oh, that's who it is, Jeff George?
See, mind of a steel trap.
Yeah.
Told you. Jeff George. Jeff George's first NFL game was against the Bills in Buffalo after he was the number one pick. I believe Drew Bledsoe's first game as the number one pick was also against the Bills in Buffalo, and Ryan Leaf's first game was against the Bills in San Diego. Amazing.
Amazing.
Why does the NFL do that to the Bills? They make them play all these number one picks.
All the number one
picks? First game of their career.
Hey, test them out.
And Ryan Leaf was number two pick, obviously. Manning was the one pick that year, right? Mm-hmm. All right, we got some people in the studio here. You guys come on around here. Want to show you? Come on out. Does she want to come on TV? Oh, she doesn't want to. She's so cute. She should come on TV. Come on, guys. Over here. What's your name?
Come over here.
Come over here. Stand right here. Maybe we can get the camera on and you can see. There you go. Stand right there. Stand right here so the camera can see you. There you go. Now you can. What's your name?
Trevor.
Trevor, talk into the mic, Trevor. Where do you live?
Cheektowaga, New York.
That's where I grew up. I grew up in Cheektowaga. I grew up on Harlem Road. I went to Cleveland Hill High School. Do you know where that is? You don't know? Okay, well, maybe you will go. Who's your favorite Bills player?
Sammy Watkins.
Awesome. How about you?
What's your name?
Jacob?
Mm-hmm. Where are you from?
Pennsylvania.
What part?
Wow.
Bethlehem.
Very nice. I have family down in Allentown. Who's your favorite Bills player?
Tyrod Taylor.
Nice. What do you think about the Bills in 2017? What is going to happen? What kind of season are the Bills going to have? Are they going to win a lot of games?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, they're going to win the Super Bowl?
I don't know.
All right, well, that's our okay answer. What do you think?
What do you think?
I think they might go in the playoffs.
All right.
Might go in the playoffs.
We could take that.
Yeah, we take that.
You guys, see, you guys have never seen a playoff game because you're too young. I've seen playoff games. I've been here for playoff games. Mm-hmm. It's pretty crazy. I can tell you this. If they go to the playoffs, you're going to want to stay away from your mom and dad. They're going to get crazy.
Right.
I just want you to know that. All right, they will absolutely be crazy, and they will do really crazy things. So maybe you will someday too, but that's the way it's going to be. You might think it's normal because you're young; it's the first time you see it, and like, well, whatever, dude. But they will go crazy. Absolutely. Now, are your mom and dad and everybody in your family Bills fans?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Are they crazy on game day to like shout at the TV and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. That kind of happens up there.
Sometimes that can be good or bad, right? Sometimes they're upset and they shout at the. Do they throw anything at the TV?
Okay. No? Okay. Good. All right. We don't want to ask you if they swear. I don't want you to tell us that.
Yeah, I don't
want to
know that.
All right. No doubt about it. All right. Well, you guys, what are you doing here today? What kind of tour are you getting? Who are you with? And what are you looking at?
I'm with my dad and my mom and my brother.
And what are you guys looking at? Just kind of getting a tour of the field house or what?
Yeah.
What'd you think of it? Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Would you like to play football there someday?
I maybe would like to play football, but I don't know if I'm gonna go to the Bills.
All right. Well, that's okay. Maybe you'll be good.
You
want
to go to the Bills?
No.
Why not?
I want to, but.
Oh, you don't think you'll be good enough?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
you'll be good enough.
What position do you play?
Wide receiver, cornerback, and linebacker.
See, you're with a wide receiver. He was a wide receiver for the Bills.
Yep.
Did you know that?
Did.
So you're standing here with
the
Buffalo
Bills.
And
we're like the same size.
That's right. Hey guys, thank you for stopping by. Stay right here. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Coming back on the other side, we're going to talk with somebody your mom and dad know very well, Frank Reich. He was the quarterback for the Bills. He was the greatest comeback in NFL history quarterback, and he's now the current offensive coordinator of the Philadelphia Eagles. He joins Donald and I when we come back here on the John Murphy Show. The set will be a little lighter when we come back. We're going to take care of these guys during the break as well. Stay tuned.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
All right, that was fun. We had some fun. We had some tour going on here. We brought some kids in the studio. I think Donald and I are going to get replaced here soon. Those kids, they don't know what they were talking about. We have to fix your mic now because it's low. It's low now because you had a 12-year-old sitting there, if that. You're a little taller than that. I don't think Donald's mic is on, but that's all right because we're doing a sports update here. We can get that. Ezekiel Elliott may face a short suspension. That is a report coming out nationally. I don't exactly know where the original report came from, but there is a report nationally about that. And that is due to the domestic situation from earlier last season, which has yet to completely be resolved by the investigation from the NFL. We'll keep you on top of that. Michael Pineda, Yankees, torn ligaments. Tommy John surgery recommended. However, he is going to try and get a second opinion on that, and we'll see where that goes because the Yankees need all the pitching help they can get after the way they fell down the stretch of the first half. The second half of the baseball season begins tonight, and it's Yankees-Red Sox for a three-game set at Fenway. Speaking of the Red Sox, Pablo Sandoval has been designated for assignment, just hasn't had quite the year that they expected, so the Red Sox have designated him for assignment. And the Sabres hockey have announced the return of the Prospects Challenge. That is going to happen opening weekend of the NFL season, but don't worry, they're not going to do it on a Sunday. You can still watch your Bills at home against the Jets because it's a Friday, Saturday, Monday situation, and you can go to Sabres.com. to read all about that. Sal Capaccio, Donald Jones here. We're getting your calls on a few different things. We're awaiting to hear from Frank Reich. As soon as we get him on the line, we'll let you know. And in the meantime, we're talking about something that Frank Reich very well may be a part of, which is top 10 performances in Bills history, and that's going to be on MSG on Monday night at 9 p.m. Will he be a part of that with the comeback game? I think he will be, but I can't spoil it for you. You have to watch. We'll talk with him as soon as we get connected up. In the meantime, also getting your calls on the Buffalo Bills in general, if you have any questions or comments, and how hardcore of a fan you are and things that you do throughout the week or on game day. Frank, speaking of Frank, not Reich, but in Williamsville, joins us next on the John Murphy Show. What's going on, Frank?
Hey, John, I respect your opinion. I really think you know your stuff about these Bills talent levels and players. I thought last year the Bills had enough talent to make the playoffs. They just weren't coached well enough. And I'm wondering if you agree with that and if you think what their talent level is this year.
You know, I think you're really close to that.
I think Sal and I talked about – was this yesterday we talked about this? I think – and Sal, I think, will say the same thing. Talent-wise, they're probably around the same as they were last year.
They lost some, they gained some.
Right, exactly. You know, depth-wise, I'm not really sure. But – and Sal talks about this all the time – all of the teams are really around the same, 8-8, 500 teams. There's always one or two teams that the ball bounces in their direction. and they end up winning 10 games or 11 games or something like that, and they sneak into the playoffs. So I do think that the Bills will be coached a little bit differently than they were last year, which, you know, could be better, could be worse. We don't know that yet. It seems like it's going to be a lot better, a lot more organized, and that might help put this team into the playoffs.
Yeah, and I'll say this. When people talk about coaching, Frank, I think we immediately think of, you know, the head coach or maybe just the coordinators. I do agree this team will be better coached at in every position, essentially, because I think that they're going to get back to basics, and they have coaches who've been around this game who understand what Sean McDermott wants, and they're all going to be on the same page. I'm not telling you that the coaches Rex had were not good coaches. That's not what I'm saying. I just think it's going to be more streamlined, better communication, and I think they'll be better off for it at every position.
Sal, Vic Carucci has written a little bit about Rex Ryan and their approach to coaching and communication, et cetera. And specifically, and he made it seem as if that, like, the defenders kind of didn't know what to do out there. It was like Ryan took for granted that they understood his schemes when they didn't, and that had a lot to do with them falling from number one D to you know, near the bottom after his first year coaching. Do you tend to agree with that?
I do. I'll say it this way. I think Rex was coaching a defense that was really made to operate not in 2017, but in years past. And I'm not saying that to be critical of Rex Ryan and his defense, because he's a fabulous defensive coordinator and defensive coach. But I just don't think that his defense caught up with what offenses are doing these days. And I think the Bills suffered for that last year. He made it too complicated. He made it too wordy. He made too many checks. And in this 2017 NFL we live in, 2016 last year, Frank, you're living in a world where offenses are going at a breakneck pace. Guys can do multiple things, and you don't have time to relay those words, those calls, those checks, and everybody's kind of looking around when the ball is snapped. You get 10 men on the field against Miami in an overtime game. You get 12 men on a field at a time where you'd have to take a timeout because of it. I think those are the things that would be cleaned up, and those are the things that were really the Rex Ryan defense's Achilles heel, if you get my drift.
So, who is responsible for hiring Ryan, and should they have known that he was kind of coaching into last year's model, and he wasn't up to the new kids on the block, so to speak?
Well, you know, the owners, they hire the coach. The owners always hire the coach. You know, it's always their responsibility. They have the final call. Even Sean McDermott, no matter who it is, if you have a new owner, if you have a new coach, the owner hires that coach. And you know what? I mean, they felt that Rex Ryan would be suited to, you know, run what he was running. And look, he did go to two AFC championship games
right
in New York. Running the same defense, and he took, I think, a mediocre, talented offensive team for the Jets, and took Mark Sanchez and that group to AFC championship games. So I'm not going to, you know, necessarily criticize the hire. I think that they realized after a while it wasn't working. They got out of it. But to answer your question, and I thank you for the phone call, Frank, the owner always makes the call on the coach. I mean, that's their team. They have a right to do that.
Right. It's like any business, you know. The CEO makes the final calls, the final decisions, but they're going to get input from other people. The owners get input from the GMs and from other people who they might hire, whatever it might be, and then they make the final call
right
on the hire.
You know, the same thing here. You know, you get the Sean McDermott as your head coach, but you know, he was one of five interviews or whatever they had, four interviews, and you know, Doug Whaley and Jim Monas and the staff that was here before being let go, they're the ones who line these up. They identify these candidates. Mm-hmm. They bring them to ownership. And you're going to have multiple interviews
right
with ownership, with just them. There was an interview with ownership. There was an interview without ownership with Sean McDermott, where he first talks with the people who, you know, it's kind of like the gatekeeper, right? Mm-hmm. Are you good enough to advance on to talk with the owners, right?
Right,
I mean,
that's
kind of what it is. And as an athlete, I'm sure you've gone through that. You probably go through a process where, okay, are you good enough to advance on? Maybe you're getting recruited by Youngstown State. You got a position coach recruiting you. Okay, I want you. Now maybe we're going to talk to the head coach. Let's see if he wants you.
Well,
that's the process.
It's the same as at the combine, right? We all know you have informal and formal visits at the combine. So
right,
your informal visits sit in a huge room with all of the teams. Each team gets a certain table, and you get 15 minutes. It's like speed dating. You know, you get 15 minutes to talk to each team. And you rotate, and the teams will call you over. You'll sit down and talk with the position coaches, whatever it may be. Then you have your formal visits where a certain team wants to talk to you.
Right.
So they'll call you into their hotel room that they have designated for them to do these visits. And you'll have a position coach, the scout that, I guess, introduced for you to the team. You'll have the head coach, the GM sometimes, maybe even the owner, depending on the team. So, yeah, it's the same process, you know. Are you good enough to speak to the head coach and the owner and the GM and all of that stuff? Yes, it's all the same process.
And I'll even – let's talk about, you know, the owner process. Every team is different. I've spoken with Sean McDermott about this. I've asked him, you know, what the difference was between the process of each team. It's pretty crazy and remarkable, Donald, how each team has their own way of doing things.
Right.
He interviewed in Cleveland. He interviewed with the Jets. He interviewed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers before they hired Dirk Cutter down there. And every team was a different way of doing it. Some teams were just the GM and him. Some teams were ownership plus GM. Some teams were a whole bunch of people in the room in the front office. Some were more conversational. Some were very pointed questions.
Right.
Some lasted 5-6 hours. Some lasted 3-4 hours. Some were maybe in a hotel room. Some were in an office. Totally different the way everybody does it. So I think that, you know, maybe sometimes some fans get a little too caught up in.
And media,
that's right. Yeah. Too caught up in who hired somebody and how they got to that process, because every single team is different. And you probably change your own approach if you hire somebody and it doesn't work out, and then you go to another round and you have to hire somebody else.
Right. I mean, look, all of these teams are trying to get it right.
That's right.
You know, so you look at the teams that get it right. Okay, they have their models of doing things. The Patriots model is totally different than the Steelers model of doing things, which is totally different than the Packers and the Giants. You know, and you'll look at all of those teams. You'll get input. And you got to remember, these owners are still new to this thing, you know, and they're still trying to figure it out themselves. We all feel like they've kind of gotten it right, but we don't know yet. We have to see how it plays out once we get into the season and then next year and the year after that. But everywhere, every team, every organization does things a little bit differently, you know, and it's not even just the hiring process. It's who controls the 53. It's all of that stuff. Everybody is different.
I believe we're going to have Frank Reich now. I think he joins us here on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. Frank, of course, the architect of the greatest comeback in NFL history, former Buffalo Bills quarterback, went on to a career with other teams in the NFL after that, and now in coaching is the offensive coordinator currently for the Philadelphia Eagles. Frank, it's my pleasure. I grew up watching you, and my chance to talk to you for the first time on the radio. My name is Sal. I got former Bills wide receiver Donald Jones with me. Thank you very much.
Great. Nice to join you guys. Appreciate it.
Frank, we're just talking about the process of hiring coaches and things like that. You've been through this process. You can speak directly to what we're talking about. You've been through the process of interviews to be a head coach, interviews to be a coordinator. Just how different is it from team to team, and how much do you have to prepare for all those different types of scenarios and situation walking into those interviews?
It's a pretty exciting time, I mean, because you get a chance to meet with owners and GMs and, you know, the top people in this business. And you know, these are great people who have, you know how to do things, and it's exciting. The two head coaching interviews that I've had were great experiences for me, you know, on every level. You know, and the cool thing is it's not just about the interview. I mean, these things are so thorough. They do a 360 search. I mean, they're calling everyone. It seems like they call everyone you've ever interacted with, every janitor, every player, every coach. They really do their homework, which is really, I think, the way you got to do it. I mean, you're investing a lot of money in a head coach or even an offensive or a defensive coordinator, and you got to be thorough in that process.
You talked about being thorough. What are some of the things that they necessarily look for when they're interviewing you, and then some of the things that you look for when you're doing an interview?
Well, you know, I think a couple things they're looking for. You know, they're looking for your vision for the team. You know, what is it? What are going to be your core values? What are going to be those things that the program is going to ride on? What's going to be your mantra and the theme that you're going to carry through and repeat every day? I think that, you know, they're also looking for, you know, how do you handle adversity? You know, can you get a team through a tough time, because it's going to happen in this league. You know, can you get a team through a tough time? And then really, I think the other thing they want to know, and I think this is the big one, they want to know who your staff is. They want to know who you're going to hire as an offensive and a defensive and a special teams coordinator. That's such a core part of what you have to do. And so staffing is a huge part. And so If you're, especially if you're a first-time head coach, like I, you know, prospective first-time head coach like I was, there's even more importance on who you're going to have as your coordinators. Now, if you're a proven NFL head coach, I think they put a little bit, they trust that more. But when you're interviewing as a first-time prospective head coach, they have a real strong interest in who your staff's going to be.
And then what are some of the things that you look for or you might ask them when you're in an interview?
Well, one of the big questions that every head coach has is, you know, how's the control of the roster going to go? You know, how much say? And I, you know, I think today it's done differently with different teams. You know, and I think more than anything, what I'm what I look for is I really thrive on a collaborative effort. And I feel if you have the right dynamics and the right trust, that I just that as a head, if I were interviewing for a head coaching position, I'd be one of those guys that'd be fine with the GM having the say, having the final vote on a lot of those things, as long as I felt like this is going to be a collaborative effort between the between the GM, the head coach, and the scouts and the coaching staff. The places where I've been, where we work together, that's never been an issue, but you just want to get a sense that, that that's going to happen.
The last question I have for you on this coaching, let's say you're doing an interview for a certain team. They might not necessarily have their franchise quarterback. Is that something that you talk about? Like, who's the quarterback going to be? I mean, is that something that you talk about in an interview?
Absolutely. That's a huge part of it. The personnel, and you're exactly right, that I really missed that, that they want to talk, they want to hear you as the prospective head coach talk about their personnel. You know, so you're walking into a position, you know, every the interviews that I've done, hey, tell us, what do you think of our roster? Who do you like on our roster? What do you think? Who are you going to build around? Who are the key, you know, that kind of a conversation. And so every position is important, but obviously the quarterback position has probably a little bit more importance than the rest. So, and as a guy who's an offensive coordinator and a former quarterback, those are, you know, I feel like a strength that I bring to the table as far as, hey, who's your, not only who's your quarterback going to be, but that's one place where I want to have a lot of say. That's one place where I feel like my expertise is at. And so whether we're going to be drafting a guy, or whether we're going to be, there's going to be a competition between a couple guys who are currently on the roster. Those are things that, as a prospective head coach, at least with my background, that's an area where I'd want to say, hey, this is a call I feel like I need to make.
You know, Frank, you coached Philip Rivers, and you go from him, a guy who has, you know, pretty much like Hall of Fame credentials in many areas, a very, you know, been in this league a long time, a veteran quarterback, to going to coach Carson Wentz. What kind of shift is that for you as a coach, as a coordinator? How different is that to coach a guy like Philip Rivers and then go to a guy like Carson Wentz who's just starting his career, especially for someone who has seen that, who has been there and has played quarterback in this league?
It's a, it's an awesome transition. I mean, for me, it couldn't work out any better having a chance to have coached Peyton Manning and Philip Rivers, you know, and then to go and now – so you get two guys who are in the prime of their career who have done it all in one respect and have had great careers. And now you go and you get a chance to really develop a guy from the ground up. I just think it has really well equipped me to be an asset to Carson, to help him, to help, you know, help him understand what it takes, having been around some guys at the top and played with, obviously, Jim Kelly as well. So having been around that, you can bring that to bear on that situation.
Now, last year, Carson came on strong in the early part of the season, and then he started to die. You know, I guess he balanced off once we got later into the season. What do you feel like some of the things he needs to improve upon, and how's he looked this offseason?
He's looked great. You know, I think it'll be a whole different animal. He did have a solid rookie year, all things considered, especially when you consider 8 days before our opener last year, he was the third-team quarterback, and he had been hurt for the last two or three preseason games and was our third-team quarterback. And then we make a trade 8 days before the season opener, and he's our starter. And, and we start out 3-0. So that was a big credit to him, to the guys on the team rallying around him. And then, you know, I think some of it's just the ups and downs of the league. Yeah, I mean, there were some – he came out really hot, was the talk of the league. And things settle down. Teams catch, defenses catch up a little bit. You go through the ebbs and flows of a season at quarterback. That's just the way it goes. I mean, And so really what you're looking for in year two is improvement. You know, I still and I want him to be take us to the playoffs and beyond. I want him to make the Pro Bowl in year two. But you can't go from 0 to 60 right. at the quarterback position in 1 year. It doesn't happen. So he already started out very well. If he can make some good progress, have a little bit higher completion percentage, you know, we got to make more big plays in the passing game. I think we've helped it last year. We were in a tough predicament, you know, at the skill position at time, our offensive line, when we lost our starting right tackle for 10 games, some of those things factored in. So what we're looking for in year two, more consistency, higher completion percentage, more big plays, and just playing consistent winning football.
Now he's had a full, you know, a full offseason in your program, and I see he's embracing that leadership role, and he's had all of the guys out to Fargo out there in North Dakota. Is that something that you talked to him about?
I think, you know, listen, this guy is mature beyond his years, and, you know, he knows how it goes. He is a natural leader. So even though he's only in his second year, that part of it's been very natural for him to take that role, to be more vocal. So that, I think that comes easy to him. I think he really is an unselfish player. That's one of the things I really love about him, even though I think he has star qualities and is physically, you know, gifted in some significant ways. I think he's a humble guy. I think it's all about the team for him. I don't think he's a stat guy. I think that he's concerned about winning. And so I love the fact that he's having the guys out there to North Dakota, you know, to build that camaraderie, to work on some route running and timing and accuracy. I think that's great for him and great for us.
Former Bills quarterback, current Eagles offensive coordinator Frank Reich joining us here on the John Murphy Show. Frank, what does Alshon Jeffrey do for this offense?
I mean, he just provides a big play receiver. I mean, here's a guy who's he's proven that he's a big play receiver. Will be a big help in the red zone. He's got a knack on the fade ball. He's got a huge catch radius, really good at contested catches. You know, he's not a speed guy. Alshon's not a speed guy, but he's fast enough. And I always kind of like to use the analogy because of his size. Anytime you get, even if you get a guy who's average speed, but if he's big, it feels like he's going faster than he is to a DB, and it still threatens the DB. So I think he's a deep threat. I think he's a threat in the red zone. He's got really, really good ball skills. I mean, I think he has elite ball skills. That really comes into play, making contested catches on third downs and move the sticks. So really what he's shown in the offseason and OTAs, love his attitude, love his work ethic. So we just need to, you know, bring that and keep developing that and stay healthy and make those plays that we need him to make.
Monday night on MSG here in Buffalo, we are running the top 10 individual performances in a game in Bills history. We can't reveal it. We can't spoil it for everybody, but there's a sneaky suspicion that your performance in the greatest comeback in NFL history is going to be a part of that, Frank. In that game, of course, the Bills came back. They won it. It still holds up as the greatest comeback in NFL history. You had 289 yards and 4 touchdowns passing in that game. But was there one moment? Was there one moment in that game that you always recall, you always think about maybe when you're thinking back upon that game that I'm sure so many people have asked you about?
Oh, there's, you know, probably a couple. Maybe, excuse me, the biggest one was probably the 4th and 5 that we had. You know, we were down, obviously down, and I think that we're 4th and 5 and play clock ran down. So we had to call timeout. I came over to the sideline, and, you know, Marv was phenomenal. There was never any doubt in Marv's mind that we were going for it. I knew exactly the play that I wanted to run. So we just kind of, everyone thinks that we called timeout to talk about whether we should kick a field goal or not. Really, the only reason we called timeout, as I recall it, is the play clock ran down because I think we had a play before there that for whatever reason we got behind on the play clock. So when I go over to the sideline, you know, we just kind of confirmed that we're going for it. And, you know, we called a play, and it was a play that I knew I was either going to have Andre Reed going down the middle for the touchdown, or else if not, then I was going to have the back out of the backfield just for pick up the first down. It turned out they played cover 2 man, and Andre did a great job beating the nickel, and we hit the play for the touchdown. That was really that was really the play that I thought we're gonna win this game.
It was one of the greatest games in NFL history. It is still the greatest comeback in NFL history. People forget, though, the following week, you had to turn it right around and go to Pittsburgh. You guys won that game 24-3, obviously, while Jim was still injured. You go out in that game, another 16 of 23 for 160 and two touchdowns. You know, one of the things that athletes have to do is get over their wins quickly to move on to the next game. With all the euphoria going on in Buffalo, I remember I was here, Frank. I don't think anybody got a thing of work done the next 2 days after the comeback. How hard was it for you guys to turn around and focus on the Pittsburgh Steelers the next week?
Well, I mean, you know, I really think that was a testament to, you know, to our coaching staff, obviously led by Marv Levy, and our veteran leadership of, you know, coming down off that high of having the greatest comeback in NFL history. And getting ready the next week to go on the road, and to go into Pittsburgh of all places and win a playoff game. So, you know, it's funny you say that because I look back on that game, and you know, I'd forgot what my stats were, but now that you say it, it's like I've always thought, even though I didn't recall what my stats were for that game, I've always been really proud of that game for the reasons that you say, to go on the road and win a playoff game on the road after that win. I just think was a big testament to our team and a big win for us.
We see a lot of documentaries, a lot of films, a lot of things being done on the four Super Bowls. Now we are, you know, 20 some odd years away from that run. The general sentiment is, Frank Reich, that, you know, the further we get away from that, the more appreciated those football teams were and what that run is. Is that the way you feel about it too? That, you know, I know you're proud of what you did, but, you know, obviously we've been in Buffalo, we've had to endure jokes and things like that, four Super Bowls and losses, but do you get the sense that nationally that team, that run, that situation is more appreciated the further we get away from that?
Well, you know, it may be, and I think that's a fair assessment. But honestly, I think as players who were involved in it, I don't really concern myself too much with that. I think we, as in Western New York, we know what we had. And I think we all, the fans, the media, and the players, I think we all knew it was something that we shared in together. And I really think it is all of those aspects. I mean, it wasn't just the players. It wasn't just the fans. It was all of it, and the media as well. I mean, it was, I think we all took a sense of pride in those years, in that run that we had. I think we all knew that it was special. And, you know, I think that's, you're right. I think the test of time does kind of prove that out to be that way. But really what we look at is the relationships that I have with players, the relationships that I have with the media, you know, even back in those days. When I see those guys, when I see Murph and, you know, those guys and guys who were around in the media back then, I really look at those guys that we were in it all in it together. The fans, there were fans that used to sit in the stands. I knew where they sat every week. I'd go say hello to them when I come out in the field before the game. You know, and you see those people when I'm in Buffalo, if I run into any of them, it's really cool. So I think that's what was pretty special about that time.
And what about your relationship now? I mean, we always hear about the brotherhood. Steve and Thurman are both regular contributors to this radio program. They always talk about the brotherhood and the relationship. We see Daryl now after what Jim's been through. I think you guys seem to have even gotten closer, that entire group. What's the relationship like now? I know you're coaching. It's hard on your time, but that brotherhood and that bond you have now these days.
Well, it is a brotherhood, and as you've said, all the guys will testify to that. For me personally, as a coach, it's a little bit harder. I don't get to go to Jim's golf tournament, for instance, every year. That kills me that I can't go. But every year, his golf tournament is, you know, there's a Monday that we're in the middle of OTAs and we're in the heat of OTAs, and there's just no way I can get out of it. I can't go to any of the obviously in season alumni events when they have alumni back. I still get to see the guys, talk to them every now and then, but I, unfortunately for me, I'm not able to participate in as much as that as some of the other guys, and to be able to enjoy that as much. But even the little bit that I am, it's like it is something, a bond that cannot be broken.
Frank Reich, current offensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles, former Buffalo Bills quarterback, architect of not only the greatest comeback in NFL history, Donald, the greatest comeback in college history when he's at Maryland. That's the most amazing thing. Frank, that's just seriously still incredible to think you did both of those things. I don't think people realize the college part because you're known for the NFL part. How many people really maybe talk about the college comeback you had as opposed to the NFL these days?
Yeah, I mean, not as many. Not as many, obviously, but there's some. I mean, some of the people who are really true sports people and kind of know are familiar with it and we'll talk about it. And then, although really, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago that, believe it or not, that college record was, it held for a long time,
That's
like
right.
25 years. But about 4 years ago, I can't remember, and I can't remember who it was, but that record was broken. So, and I'm sure one day the pro record will be broken. I mean, because when we played, there were no, when we played that comeback game, there were no 2-point plays. So, if a team gets hot and can convert some 2-point plays, it would be, I'm sure at some point that record will be broken. And then you look at what the Patriots did in the Super Bowl this year. I mean, that was pretty special as well. It just shows you that it can be done, and it's not about one play. It's about the whole team. It's about all three phases syncing together, just playing good football, getting a few breaks, and pretty exciting stuff.
Michigan State, that's who it was, Frank. I got it right here. Michigan State, they came back to beat Northwestern, a 38-point comeback. Pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy. Hey, Frank, August 17th, the Bills are at the Eagles, so we like look forward to seeing you then. I'd love to shake your hand and say hello, but we really thank you for your time today. I know it's tough on you guys this during the offseason, all the things you got to put together for your offense. Best of luck for your Eagles season this year, and we look forward to seeing you on August 17th in that preseason game in Philly.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. Take it easy.
All right, thank you very much. Frank Reich, the architect of the greatest comeback in NFL history, and up until 2006, college history too.
Yeah, that's crazy.
The same quarterback.
That's crazy. I mean, I don't think people really understand how hard it is to come back on a team, especially you coming back from 32 points, 38 points. I mean, that is not easy to do. But it can happen, though. It can happen. All you got to do
breaks.
Is you need some breaks. You start getting momentum. I'm telling you, in that Patriots game, when the Super Bowl last year, when they started to come back, it was like, oh, they're going to come back. Like, they had the momentum. And they got a couple breaks Julian Edelman catch and stuff like that happens. The ball bounces in your way. Next thing you know, you find yourself, you now come back, and all you got to do is score one to win the game or convert a 2-point conversion or something like that, and you get it.
I feel like Howard Simon. I'm way over the break right now. I got to get to a commercial. It's Friday. I'll just make fun of Howard. That's okay. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Thank you very much to Frank Reich. That was well worth it, though. We had Frank Reich on the air and on the line, and we appreciate him joining us. Check it out. If you haven't, BuffaloBills.com, John Murphy Show, WGR550.com, on-demand audio. It'll be right there for you. We'll be right here for you when we come back, too.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Thank you very much to those of you who've commented and tweeted about the Frank Reich interview. We got one here from Renee. What an awesome interview with Frank Reich. Yeah, thank you very much. He was great. And because he was honest, like a lot of times you get those coaches on, they're kind of guarded. I loved it. I thought he was great. You asked some really good questions about Carson Wentz, and I thought his answers were really good.
You know, the coaches are guarded, especially when you ask them a question about their players and their quarterback, and it's like, you know, what things does he need to improve upon? And he actually said it.
He said completion percentage.
Right.
You know, things like that was really good. All right, let's go out to John and Cheektowaga before we do real news, fake news. John, thanks for holding through that. Thank you very much. You're on the air.
Hi, Sal.
Hi.
Yeah, I was wondering, you know, you've gotten to know a little bit of the coaches since they were hired. You think they're going to be able to handle Marcell Dareus? Because he obviously has – he seemed to have contempt for Rex almost. You know, he didn't – You read the quotes, and it seemed like you didn't even want to play for him. What do you think?
I don't think that's necessarily true, John. I think you have a very good question, but I don't think Marcell didn't want to play for Rex Ryan. I think Marcell Dareus, in fact, the opposite is true. I think that he wasn't held as accountable as he should have been last year, and I think that was on Rex. I think that was on Dennis Thurman, and I think that was on his position coach, John Blake. Now, I think that, you know, every person is different, and maybe they just felt Marcell needed some space, but it didn't work out correctly for the team. But to answer the question, Donald, if you didn't hear it there, I know you were working there. If you didn't hear it, his question is, will they be able to handle Marcell? And my answer to you, and I'll let Donald expand on this, is you have the coach coaching defensive line, who I think is the perfect guy to, quote-unquote, handle him. And if they can't, then I don't know if anybody can, you know, get Marcell Dareus to play the way he should.
I don't even – it's you have the coach and his defensive line coach.
That's what I mean, yeah.
You have Leslie Frazier, yep. who is more of a mentor type of of coach, and he's been
Mike
a mentor.
Mike Waffle, by the way, the defensive line
Waffle.
Coach.
You have Leslie Frazier and the defensive coordinator, and then you have Coach McDermott. And the combination of those three guys, and you couple that with he still has Kyle, you know, next to him. He still has guys like Lorenzo and those leaders on the defensive side of the ball. And I think all of those things are going to help him. But I think ultimately we had him in on the show. You got a chance to see him in practice and things like that. He looks like he's a man on a mission. He looks like he feels like he has something to prove because he's coming off the season he had last year. He looked like he slimmed down a little bit. He's into it. We had him on the show. He said he's in his zen, whatever that means.
Right.
And I think he's really into this thing. I think he wants to get back to where he's considered one of the top five, top three defensive linemen in the game, defensive tackles in the game.
He certainly has that ability, Don.
Mm-hmm.
He has the ability, and he still has a long career left. He's not old.
He's young. He's
26?
Yeah,
maybe,
26,
right?
27.
I mean, he's in at that position, he can play a while. So he has, to me, and I'm really not trying to be hyperbolic here, I think Marcell Dareus has Hall of Fame ability. I think he has of Fame ability. It doesn't mean he's going to be a Hall of Famer.
But he
it's
has
up
the
to
ability
him
to do it.
To take control of his own career to be that type of player.
Right.
And a guy like Mike Waffle, who's an ex-Marine, who has been in this league as a coach at the highest of levels and has won Super Bowls. He won a Super Bowl coaching the D-line of the Giants when they beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, the second one, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the kind of guy I think that maybe Marcell can respond to. I also want to go back to something we talked about earlier. We said here, we're talking about Martavis Bryant and things like that. Lots of these guys have things going on in their lives you never know about.
Right.
I think Marcell has had a lot of things go on in his life that maybe people just don't understand, don't know about. That's not an excuse. But I think it's a reason for maybe why he hasn't responded to certain people the way maybe others want him to respond to. And you hope you can tap into something that allows him to say, you know what, I need to do this or this differently and this right to get beyond all of that. And I think that's the challenge with a guy like Marcell.
That really is the challenge. I mean, it's the same for him, for Martavis Bryant, for guys that, you know, and it, whoever it is, you have so many things that you're dealing with off the field, back home, wherever you're from. And, you know, some guys just don't respond the same way. And then you have a guy, and people – I hate when I hear people say, well, he's making this amount of money. That does not matter. He still is a human being that deals with certain things. Yeah, the fact that he's making this type of money, yes, he does need to get his act together and perform on the field and all of that stuff. And I think he understands that. And I think he feels like he wants to get back to where he was a couple years ago when he had 10-plus sacks. I think he wants to do that, you know, for himself. Not even necessary and for himself and for his teammates, not for the fan base, not for anybody else. It's for himself, for his teammates, for his family. He wants to get back to being the top defensive lineman or considered one of the top five, top three defensive linemen in the game. I think, like you said, ability wise, he does have Hall of Fame ability. He definitely does. It's all going to be up to him if he makes it in the Hall of Fame, because he does still have a lot of years to get back to the top. And if he can get back to being that guy and consistently be that guy for the next 5 or 6 years, then you'll see Marcell Dareus in the Hall of Fame at that point.
I do this all the time. I have done this many times. My apologies to anybody who's been in the service or military, especially Marines. I have said in the past, ex-Marine on the air. The guy's an ex-Marine.
Right.
And every time I do, someone tweets me, very cordially, not to be a jerk, someone tweets me and says, it's not ex-Marine. It's a former Marine. And I intentionally, in my brain, knew that when I said it this time, but I mixed it up. And I said, I'm going to do it right this time. When I'm talking about him just a minute ago, I'm like, I'm going to do it right. It's ex-Marine. Of course, Josh says, it's former Marine. It's never an ex-Marine unless you get kicked out. So my apologies, Josh, and to all Marines out there. I'm still figuring that out. I didn't realize this, but it's a big deal, I guess. And I didn't realize. I thought I had it right this time, and I screwed it up again, Dom.
Still got it wrong.
I was trying intentionally
and you,
to get it right
like,
this
you
time.
You confidently
I
got
totally,
it wrong, though.
I
mean,
I know.
He has to give you credit for that. You confidently got it wrong. Like, at least Josh, you were like, this is what it is.
I know.
You weren't like, I wonder if it's this or this.
So it's former Marine.
Former Marine.
I thought before someone said it's not former, it's ex. But I guess it's not ex, it's former. Here's the thing.
You know, I have a lot of faith in you. But because you're so screwed up, You're probably going to get it wrong again.
I'll probably get it wrong again. I got to remember, it's former, not ex. I've done it so many times, and I've done it like three or four times where people correct me, that this time I said, I'm getting it right, darn it. I'm getting it right. And I thought ex was right, and I got it wrong again. So I apologize. So I'll just turn it over to you for Real News, Fake News. How about we do that, all right? Real News, Fake News brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. All right, Real News, Fake News. The first one we're going to use is Tyrann Mathieu. Real News, Fake News. There's a story that says he's the best defender in the NFL. Is that real or fake? Excuse me. Is that real or fake? Tyrann Mathieu, Real News, Fake News, best defender in the NFL.
That's fake. Tyrann Mathieu, he makes a lot of plays. He's usually around the ball, and he'll strip the ball away, and all of that stuff is good. Tyrann Mathieu cannot cover. Like, you're not going to line him up in the slot and say, look, we need you to cover the slot receiver, or line him up outside and say, we need you to cover their number one receiver. So, no, I don't think he's the best defender in the game. I think he's good. He's good at making plays, but I don't think he's the best defender in the
game. It's completely fake. He's not even the best defender on his own team. Patrick Peterson is.
Right. That was a good point. I mean, I don't know how I skipped over that point.
But that's all right. I mean, of course, Patrick, he's good, but there are other guys in this league. Right. Patrick Peterson is a better defender than him. He's on his own team. All right, Real News, Fake News. Jarvis Landry going through a contract situation, part of that famed now 2014 wide receiver class. So he's going into the final year of his contract. There's some stuff going on with the fifth year and stuff like that. I believe they picked it up, but they're working on all that stuff. Jarvis Landry, actually, no, they can't. Fifth year because he wasn't a first rounder. Jarvis Landry is tougher to cover than Odell Beckham Jr., also part of the 2014 class.
That is completely false.
Fake.
Yeah, fake, I meant to say. Odell Beckham Jr. is one of the best players in the game, period. He's one of the best. He's top five receiver in the game. He is very hard to cover because he can run routes. He can take you over the top of the defense. He can do whatever he wants to do. So, no, Jarvis Landry is not tougher to cover than Odell Beckham.
I agree with you again. This is fake news. Odell Beckham, because he is so incredibly athletic, like Plastic
right.
Man,
mm-hmm.
and can make catches all around his body the way he contorts, and the fact that he can run different routes. He reminds me of Stevie the way he runs some routes
yeah.
sometimes. He's shifty like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, and we all know Stevie was such a weird guy to cover. Revis couldn't cover Stevie
right.
because of how shifty he was and things he did. And then on top of that, you throw in the athleticism. It's quite amazing.
And he's way faster.
Yeah, that's right. All right, we'll get to the last one. We'll see. This, is, I think, is the most interesting one here. Real News, Fake News. The Combine would have helped and boosted Chad Kelly's stock in the draft. He was drafted last overall, Mr. Irrelevant. If he had gone to the Combine, real or fake, that would have helped him. He would have been drafted sooner.
If he had gone to the Combine, I'm going to go real on this one. I think it would have helped him. He would have had a chance to talk to all of the different teams, and he probably would have thrown there. Instead, because he wasn't there, he didn't get that chance to speak to all of the teams in that one setting, and he ended up getting hurt, and he tried to throw at his pro day, and he couldn't do that. And so there you have
it. This has to be real to me because in order to be fake, he'd either had to be drafted the exact same spot or not drafted at all.
Mm-hmm.
He was the last draft pick. I would say real. Some team would have, I think, seen past the issues he had in the past if they were able to talk to him and had him graded higher than where he was.
Right.
It's real to me because I think, and by the way, I said at the time, and I hold true to this, he should have been allowed to go there.
He should have been. Yeah.
Because that's what the Combine is for. I get it that people say, well, it's a reward. Look, there are lots of people, lots of guys who've gone to the Combine that did a lot worse stuff than Chad Kelly, to be quite honest with you.
Right.
This guy should have done exactly what the Combine is set up for, which is go there, talk to teams, and be able to explain himself like a man to personnel departments. But that said, he didn't. He was still drafted. I think it would have helped him. I'll say real news as well. We'll come back. We'll take a timeout. One last segment with me here for this week with Donald Jones on the John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Brought to you by Advanced Alarm, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Kim Jones on from NFL Network. We asked her about Tyrod Taylor and the season that she thinks Tyrod is going to have and what kind of player she thinks the Bills have in their quarterback.
Can tell you I'm a big Tyrod Taylor fan.
Mm-hmm.
I love the skills that he brings to a field. He's fun to watch. He's effective. He's got a great arm, got great legs, got some great weapons. I'm also a big LeSean McCoy fan. So I like a lot of what he has to offer. I think he can win. I think you can win with him. And clearly, it looks like the Bills think they can win with him, and I hope they do.
Ladies, you wouldn't know it because we're behind a desk, but Donald Jones has great legs, too, just so you know.
Whoa.
We also had Frank Reich on, former Bills quarterback, current Eagles offensive coordinator. We asked him about the appreciation nationally that seems to now resonate, finally, for those Bills Super Bowl years, when maybe really wasn't the case back years ago.
I think we, as in Western New York, we know. You know, we know what we had, and I think we all... fans, the media, and the players. I think we all knew it was something that we shared in together. And I really think it is all of those aspects. I mean, it wasn't just the players. It wasn't just the fans. It was all of it, and the media as well. I mean, it was. I think we all took a sense of pride in those years, in that run that we had. I think we all knew that it was special.
Coming up next on WGR on the radio side of things, they're going to have a sitcom draft, Chopin the Bulldog.
Hmm.
Mary Alice Demler from Channel 2 is going to join them. Ryan Gates will be there. I think Brian Mazurowski will be there from WBEN. Donald, what is your favorite sitcom? If you had the number one pick in the sitcom draft, not thinking about like the most famous, but your just favorite, what would it be?
My favorite
sitcom ever.
Martin Lawrence. But I tell you this, I liked Martin Lawrence, Fresh Prince. I liked Jamie Foxx. One of my favorite, though, was King of Queens.
Really?
Yeah.
You like
that one?
That
was funny to me.
I never watched it.
Really?
No.
That was funny to me.
I'd have to go with Cheers.
Never seen.
Really, you've never seen Cheers? See?
No.
Back in the day, Jefferson's, Three's Company,
Jefferson's,
those ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Moving on up. We are moving on out, not to the east side, but back home because it's a weekend. John Murphy back. Donald, thank you. Great hosting with you. Great job to the production crew. It's hard to even attempt to make me sound or look good on television or radio. They did their best. We hope you had a great week. Thanks for tuning in here on the John Murphy Show.